here, obviously, at the table, and we have department people available in the audience for testimony if we need it. I'm going to try and keep testimony to a minimum. Obviously, if someone feels so strongly that they just got to come up, we're not going to cut off any public testimony, reasonable public testimony. But please let the pages up here know if there's something you need to come up on so that our committee administrators, Kate and Mike up here, or Tim Michaels, so that our staff can know you're coming and prepare the chairs and understand how things are flowing. The way we'll probably proceed and the way I think would be best, and again I'm deferring to staff on both sides, is basically to take the new side-by-sides for agriculture, and we have one, differences, similar and differences for ag and veterans affairs. But however they want to staff walk through, I think, you know, maybe we'll start on veterans affairs and just start walking through and just finish that section. Then we can go to maybe biodiesel and finish that section and go to agriculture and finish that section. So we do it in actual articles in the bill. So again, if you're here for veterans affairs, you can skedaddle if you want to after that section, or if you're trying to time the bill, I guess that gives you an idea of the order. If we do veterans affairs, biodiesel, and then agriculture. And again, we'll try and walk through all the sections then and get them done. There's a number of items to talk about in all of them, but if we can refer to the same and similars as well as the side-by-sides that a lot of you are taking notes on. I know if you've still got the same one from last time, or there's a new one in your folder if you don't have the same one. So with that, are there any questions from committee members or staff at this time? Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair, as we put this package together, I'd like to have a lot more money for ag and veterans. Was not able to do that. We had to live within our target. We finally got them, so we have to stay there. I just want to say this, if you are concerned about one place didn't get enough money, you tell me where you're going to take it from. And I'm going to be very firm. I'm not going to take any money away from veterans. I'm not going to do that. So keep that in mind. We have so much money to work with. There's a lot of things in here I don't like that I didn't get enough money for. We have to live within that. So keep that in mind when you do talking about any money.
And what Senator Vickerman's referring to, and I'll concur, obviously you know this was one big bill that kind of split, and a piece of it is laying over in 1812, and some of this is reflective of money laying over there, too, that will be utilized. Senator Vickerman and I, 2 days ago, received our targets, and we had to reduce another $800,000 out of our account. And so we thought we had pretty good account to begin with, but we had to reduce. But again, the way our accounts sit over in 1812, we're actually overall putting more money into agriculture and putting more money into veterans programs than what was recommended by the administration. So we feel very good about it. But if we have to start now, if we see amendments here that are indicative of money moving around in 1812, we're going to have a problem with that, because it's a very kind of tightly drafted piece of legislation right now, and we think we have the Finance Committee on board with everything. They're the ones that gave us the targets and talked about all the things we needed to do. So that's what Senator Vickerman's talking about, and I concur. There are some, because again, there are some money issues in here. Mostly what we have, though, don't affect the budget. They're shifting of monies from one year to another, those types of things we can certainly talk about here. But if it's actually moving money from one account to another, or decreases or increases, we're going to have a difficult time. So any other questions or comments? Veteran staff, who wants to start walking us through the side-by-sides? And again, what we'll really try and do is go for the audience through what page are we on, what lines are we on, and we make the motions to adopt. We'll really try and be specific so as people are checking off out there, they can see what's going on.
Mr. Chairman and members, I would just like to orient it to this this side-by-side comparison document, 8.5 by 11. I passed it out, and it's titled "Veterans and Military Provisions." You'll notice in the columns on both sides, we've identified the items that have been adopted or that are still waiting. Do you all have that document? And I just wanted to point out that there are six items that are still waiting for your action. Three deal with the GI Bill, and that begins on the House side in Section 10 on page R5556. And then there are three more items. They're House-only items that begin on R66. One deals with the partnering study, one deals with Veterans Home Strategic Planning Group studies, and the third one was the County Veterans Service Office's study. And if I could ask my Senate counterpart to start describing the GI Bill, I think you understand better than I do.
Mr. Chairman and members, again, in R55 and going through the three sections that go all the way through R58, the first section on R55, the difference there, and before I begin with all that, I'll point out basically what you see is the House language here is included in the working group report on the budget bill. It was adopted by that group. And it is also contained on the Senate side of the higher ed provisions in the budget bill. Or what you see on the left side is contained on the Senate side of the budget bill. That's House File 1812. This language is also linked to money. I think there's a fiscal note on it that's somewhere in the vicinity of about $600,000. So on the House side, on R55, the difference there is the tuition factor increase is 1.2 as opposed to 1.1 on the Senate side for the cost of attendance. And that ties in, obviously, to the amount of the benefit. Then if you go to R56, the main difference there, there's some other very small technical differences. The bottom on the House side, Clause 2 is stricken there, and that basically removes the requirement that the person receiving the benefits was a resident at or around the time of their enlistment. They would still need to be a resident when they received the benefit. And then the final remaining significant difference is on R58. On the House side, the amount of educational assistance is increased to $3,000 per fiscal year. That's in Clause 2 at the bottom there on line 51.4. And the Senate leaves it at $2,000. The difference there is basically it allows a person to claim an extra semester of benefits each year. They could attend three semesters in 1 year.
And Mr. Bodern or Mr. Cleary, which side then matches up? Is it the House side that matches up with the fiscal note that's sitting in 1812, or is it the Senate side? That was the question.
Mr. Chairman, it is the House side.
So we should adopt that House language, and we would be done with the GI Bill portion?
I believe that's correct.
Okay. Senator Rolfe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. And I did talk to Representative Dent yesterday, as well as put in a call to Representative Rukavina and Senator Pappas, Senator Vickerman. Related in general to the GI Bill, I do have some concerns that we're cutting back the administrative portion of this, which is being managed by higher ed. And I understand in talking to Senator Pappas that they have already gone ahead based on the law last year, which had a lot more money in it. They went ahead and contracted out for services and did some hires and are setting up the infrastructure to deal with the Minnesota GI Bill program. And now this year, with the cuts to the actual member grant dollars going out to vets, we're still left with the challenge of needing the infrastructure in place to administer the program. And I understand that the university has said that they need, or the Office of Higher Ed, said that they need at least $106,000 to administer the program. And I know that the dollar target amount has dropped for grant money. The problem is it's sort of like an elementary school classroom. It doesn't matter if you have 5 students in the classroom or 25, you still have to hire the same teacher. You still have to pay for the lights and the heat and the infrastructure for that classroom station, I would argue it's the same sort of thing with administering the Minnesota GI Bill program. We still need the staff and administrative infrastructure in place in order to administer the program. So I'm just putting that on the table. I understand everyone's getting squeezed, but what I'm hearing from the people who've been contracted to and Senator Pappas is it puts at risk our whole grant program.
And Senator Ropes, I appreciate your call yesterday, and I know you've been very diligent on this. And just so everyone understands the situation we're in on this, obviously this was kind of a cross thing with higher ed and the Department of Veterans Affairs. The money is actually domiciled in Department of Veterans Affairs. The 50 we settled on was a target actually given to Senator Vickerman and I by Representative Carlson and Senator Cohen. When we met 2 days ago, they actually gave us the $800,000 cut, which we had to take out somewhere, so we're reducing, not adding. But they also gave us that $50,000 target, which became a tails target for them, for the Office of Higher Education to administer the program. And so that bound us at that point, and still does, frankly, until the 18-12 people, they would have to revisit their targets because it's a tails target problem. And they allowed us actually to increase our tails target by $50,000. And I know Representative Rukavina sits on that committee, and so was a part of that discussion as they set those targets. The options they have, the way I see it now, again, we cut $800,000, and remember, we had cut originally the Department of Veterans Affairs, at least on the House side, $1 million. And we rolled that back to about $300,000. So we've already put a lot more back into administration. Probably the only spot we have left, if the 1812 group would agree, would be to actually redo this language that we're looking at right now, which actually gives an increase to the students or adds a semester to the students. You'd literally have to take some of that. And there's about, the fiscal note shows about $750,000 worth of grants that are going to go out. And while I understand it sounds like 106 is an extraordinarily high amount to administer that kind of money, it is. But that person I understand too does other things, does educational things, hopefully mans some telephone lines to answer questions on GI Bill and other things. I mean, there's other duties for that person. But literally, that's probably, it's the same pot of money. Unless the Department of Veterans Affairs was willing to cut their administrative costs anymore, and I don't think they are, because again, we've really been struggling to find out where we have efficiencies there. So literally, it should come out of the same department, which is the higher education, and this pot of money that's going to the veterans is really the interplay. So while I'm open to suggestions, and Senator Vickerman and I will certainly continue the conversations with you on that, it's really something that we have talked to Cohen and Carlson about in 1812, who actually gave us that target, and that's where we're at today on it. But I really do appreciate it. I think it's a good discussion to have and make sure that everyone publicly is aware of where we're at.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Senator Vick.
Senator Rhodes, I share your concern, and I spent a lot of time talking with Senator Pappas trying to find another 50. I'm not able to do that at this point. But I agree with you, Representative Junkie. We'll continue to work, continue to meet, and see if we can bring it back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Vickerman, I appreciate that. These are tough times, everybody knows, and we all understand the concept of more going up in this column means going down in another column that we also value a lot. But I just hope this committee keeps in mind, and I pledge to you I'm going to be keeping an eye on that program, because I think it's an exceptionally important program for veterans returning. And if there's problems with it next year, I'd beg the committee's indulgence to bring it back to both the House and the Senate side, see if we can do some repair.
So, Mr. Bodden, with that, if you would give us the lines that we should adopt for the GI Bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to take the House language then and just pages R55 through R58. You would adopt House sections 10,
should be 10, 11, and 12, I believe, but let me just confirm that. Take the House language on pages R-55 through R-58.
Senator Vickerman moves the language R-55 through R-58, sections 10 through 12. Discussion on that. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, a motion prevails. Mr. Bodern or Mr. Cleary.
Mr. Chairman and members, the next item would be on R-55 and R-56. Excuse me, we just handled that. Yep. The next item would be on R-66, the House-only provision, section 18, calling for a study of partnering in the delivery of veteran services. So R-66, okay. Line 5225.
Yep. Members, you have in your packet a, as I find it here, an amendment. Oh, what, do we have an amendment on that? Oh, that's a study. Okay. Yes, we...
Partnering.
Whose was that? So why did we wait on that? I'm just asking staff why we waited on that. I'm trying to refresh my memory. Okay. All right. This is the partnering study for delivery of services, and this came out of the governor's task force recommendations. Was it Murphy's bill? No. Page R-66.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, we can work off the short list. If we really want to get the details, I think we better look at the big.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's just partnering. I'm just trying to understand what we're on here.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Cleary.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this study it was simply asking the commissioner to seek a broad input from a broad range of actors. And to assess the feasibility of public-private collaboration in veteran services, including such things as faith-based organizations, perhaps, to provide, and other organizations, of course, that are currently out there providing services to non-veterans. It could look at home health care, psychological counseling, life skills rehabilitation.
All right, I know where we're at, and this again was language that came in the House, whether we're in the home block nurse program, we're looking at all those community-based services we want the vets department, which I think they are anyway, but to continue that and look at, report back to us on what might be available. This is part of that whole discussion on how can we deliver veteran services, not just in a veteran's hospital or a veteran's home, but literally county by county in all 87 counties across the state. And that's that new model that the governor's task force recommended, and this language kind of helps facilitate that, Senator Vickerman. So if you'd like to move section 18 on R-66, I don't think there's any problem with that.
Make that move.
Senator Vickerman will move that. Is there discussion on that section? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That prevails.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
The very next item is the that we still waited on was the Veterans Home Strategic Planning Group. And actually, that's where we have that amendment.
All right.
We would begin to call that the Department of Veterans Affairs Strategic Planning Group.
Okay, that's amendment number, members A4. I'll move the A4 amendment. What this does, the department, actually the governor's office, when I say the department, the governor's office sent us a memo. Do you have that? Anyway, we got a memo on questions or concerns they might have in this bill. There were two items on it. One of the items indicated that they, in our original bill that you're looking at on page R-66, we actually set up a strategic planning group. We named members to it. We put it into statute that this group would then continue. We put who would convene the first meeting, et cetera, et cetera. The governor's office came back and said, we already have that internally. We're doing that already in the department. We have what's called the Department of Veterans Affairs Strategic Planning Group within their department. We said, great. What we will do then is basically utilize that group to do the study items that we asked for. So we're not redundant. We're not setting up a separate board for the department to administer. We're actually using the one that's already there in place, and that's what's reflective when you read the first paragraph here of this amendment. The rest of the amendment is basically the exact same things as was in the bill, just carried over to this amendment. Here's the things we're looking for a report back from this group, and they do more than this, by the way. And then we also, for our friends that are sitting here in the front row, the internal group, do you have the list of the members? The internal group, while they consult, or were interest groups, were listed as someone they should be talking to, we actually put in statute, or in session law, that they will, if you look on page 2, line 2.12, it tells them that they must consult with all these groups. And for example, last time we added 2 members each from Departments of American Legion, Veterans of Foreign Wars, Disabled American Veterans, Rural and Metro. So we actually put that in there. Not that they're not doing that, but I think it makes it very clear that we want input from everyone across the state on these items as we move forward in this planning. And so we basically just put that all in one paragraph. They're not part of a strategic study group, but that group is required to consult with them. So that, I assume, means they will be calling into meetings over the summer or fall on this, and there will be input from these groups. In addition to that, this group is also being asked to look at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. If you look at, and again, that was similar to the last bill, we add to that group to be consulted with on page 3, if you look at starting on line 3.9, we actually add some people just for the Minneapolis thing. They also need to, along with this group that we just referenced in section B on page 2, they also must then talk to representatives of our Minneapolis legislative delegation, the mayor of Minneapolis, Minneapolis city planner, Twin Cities Met Council, et cetera, et cetera. Again, strategically, to have everyone that's got a concern or an involvement with this in a broad planning way should be part of that group and that discussion at some point. So that's what's sitting in there, and that's only for the Minneapolis, not for the other stuff. So that's really the amendment, members, and I would move that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Look, on page 3 of your amendment, then. I'm kind of wondering why are we putting the mayor of Minneapolis planner, chair of Twins. Why are we doing all that?
Senator Vickerman, because it sits in the city of Minneapolis, and they've never been consulted on. They own all the property around that parcel. They Metropolitan Council runs the light rail line that goes through there. They do all the streets through there. They do all the traffic through there. You know, we think it's important they be a part, along with Minneapolis legislators, who frankly have been absent in this discussion, and it's in their district. Everyone should be a part of planning on this facility as it moves forward. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, just a... I like this amendment, but there's just one little thing I'd like to change on, if possible, and that's, you know, in the reports, normally when the reports come back, we've been adding the lead minority member on those committees, and I was wondering if we could just direct
that. What line are you looking at, sir?
There's a couple places. Mr. Bodern, I think, has...
Kate?
Mr. Chairman, on line 2.26, you have the report due to... that's due on January 15, 2009, to the chairs of the House and Senate committees. And you can just, after chairs, insert end ranking minority members.
Okay.
And then the other instance where this occurs, it may not be exactly the same thing, it may be a difference between House and Senate nomenclature. On 2.14, it says the chairs and leads of the House and Senate committees. And I wasn't sure, maybe instead of leads, you mean ranking minority members.
Okay. We'll replace leads with ranking minority members. Okay. Senator Murphy, I'll incorporate that into my amendment.
And Mr. Chairman, there's one other spot, line 1.6, to the chairs and ranking minority members.
I'd incorporate on 1.6 the same thing, ranking minority members. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know Senator Vickerman has pointed out some of the issues with money being, you know, tight, if you will, or lack thereof. Will this drain resources from the DDA at all as far as to implement this program?
Representative Hamilton, there's money for this study over in 1812. Plus, they already have this group that's in place, but we actually give them additional funds for all the study stuff you see in here. There was $200,000, 50 of that went to the Office of Higher Education. Again, realizing this group was already in place, we figured, but there's at least 150, and there's another 50 over there for planning of TBI and PTSD. So there's totally a pot of $200,000 over in 1812 to accompany this language.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I don't know as far as 1812 where that's going or anything like right. that. In the event something happens with 1812, will we still be able to implement this, or will this drain additional finances from
the
DDA?
This is a group that's already ongoing and already meeting. They've met two or three times according to the notes we've gotten. So it's already a group that's established. It's not an additional group. So we're willing to help them out, but it's also the assumption that group's there already from the information we've received.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you probably remember, during the last interim, I served on the Governor's Long-Term Care Task Force.
You were with Representative Murphy on that, right?
Yes, and Representative Severson as well. One of the things that we did, of course, you know, as most task forces do, you come up with a great big, huge binder of recommendations and things like that. One of the things we did recommend is to establish the Veterans Health Care Advisory Council, which is also in this bill.
Yep.
And just seeing this now for the first time, Representative, I'm a little unclear as concerns the differences or where these two groups overlap. And I wonder if someone from the department here can speak to that, or either you or council, because it seems to me as we look on page R60, in the Veterans Health Care Advisory Council that we have already established or are going to, we challenge those folks, and in the report that we provided them from the task force outline a lot of these same things that are in your amendments. And that group was looking at partnering with Home Based Services, the whole future of long-term care for veterans in the state of Minnesota. We have a whole list of people who are skilled and experts in long-term care. So I'm a little confused as to...
Well, Senator Rope, I guess, just to alleviate it, I don't think this, and I'll put this as intent, this does not call for redundant planning by two different groups. And they are two different groups within the department. In fact, the governor, I believe, I'm looking at the department, that group, it's out on your website, that group was actually appointed and took effect about a week or maybe two ago. So they've already appointed, that group is up. Mm-hmm. Then they have this second group, and if there are things that overlap in this section and the other section, not everything does, obviously, but there's a, you point out there might be a few. Certainly this group could simply take the other group's recommendations and bring them forward. They don't have to redo them. So there would be no redundancy, and that would be my instruction to the department, too, to not do the same thing twice. That's not what we're asking. We just really want to make certain, and I think, and I appreciate that, because a lot of this did come from your work, mm-hmm. and we're taking that very seriously, by the way, in the House, and I know in the Senate, that next year we want to move into that and really use that report and these items that come back from that report to do our long-range planning as a legislative body. So, but rather than go through and try and really, you know, we could combine, I suppose, both of the study sections, but there are two separate groups within the department right now, and if it's redundant, I think they can sort through which group does what and just bring us back the report on the items. Senator Rope.
Representative, I appreciate that, but I'm still unclear as to what the purpose of each group is doing, because it seems to be very similar.
Mr. Michaels.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rolfe, I believe that the Healthcare Advisory Council is going to be a consultant on healthcare delivery within the veterans' home itself and focus on issues involving the homes. And I think that the strategic planning group is going to look at a long-range picture and look at the demographics of the state and where future facilities might be located to meet the needs of those demographics, and then to look at other community-based services that might support veterans and their families. So I think they're kind of two distinct tracks looking at different issues and outcomes.
Well, Mr. Chair and Ms. Michaels, thank you very much. It seems to me, if I'm recalling our conversations correctly, we were dealing with the same things in that task force as far as the recommendations to this advisory council. Perhaps the department.
Mr. Chair, and Ms. Senator Ropes, again, if you look at page 2, line 2.22, that long-term care advisory council is referenced as a consulting group with this group, so they are actually part of this group also. So again, their work can simply be brought over if part of that is being done. There really isn't overlap the way we talked about it. So these are already two groups within the department. We didn't make them up. They're already there. And so we're giving both groups the same. I think Mr. Michaels is right. The one group is more internal medical service delivery within the homes, which is what you were looking at mainly. But you also referenced we need to move outside the homes or utilize those homes differently as regional centers and other things. This next group kind of starts going that way, but then goes beyond that. As Mr. Michaels said, doing compiling the veteran surveys and the number surveys. How many veterans and at what age in Crookston, Minnesota are we going to see over the next 20, 25 years, and what are the needs for services so that we can start planning where we put facilities and services. So it goes kind of beyond the scope of that healthcare group within the homes, but they are part of this. So if it is redundant, they would simply bring their information across. Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chair, I noticed the body language from a couple of members of the audience is very clear. They have something very important to tell us.
We're waiting for people to testify.
And I think I'd really like to hear what they have to say to make sure we're on the right track.
Come on up. And I know the American Legion wanted to say something.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Colonel Eric Allness, Department of Military Affairs. Just recommendation on one line. If you go to line 2-22, where it talks about the Adjutant General, make the recommendation that you say the Adjutant General and add in or designee of the Minnesota National Guard. As was found is when we did the long-term task force and revolved with that, we were able to provide a physician who had significant experience from a medical perspective as well as health and the Department of Health. So by allowing us to send a designee, we can really add value to the group.
Members on 2.21, just delete of and put or designee in on that language, and staff has got that change. I'll incorporate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Tremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 2, 214 and 215,
okay.
It says the chair of the lead of the House and Senate committees with discretion.
It now says chairs and ranking minority members. But,
right.
Yep.
And policy and finance. So the Senate has policy and finance together, and we have it separate. So how was that?
That means that you will be notified, and I will be notified, and Representative Conan will be notified, because we have three entities. In the case of the Senate, at this point, it would be Vickerman and, frankly, Berglund, because she has a piece of Veterans Affairs yet. Now, that may change next year, but if it was this year, both of those people would be notified because they each have a piece of that budget.
And, Mr. Chair, how about the minority?
And in our case, it would be Representative Hamilton and Finstead and whoever it is, and Lyles, and it would be Dill, I think, and Pinglestead.
No.
So, yeah, they're all notified.
Yeah. Thank you for the clarity.
Bipartisan. Okay. Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for wanting me on that committee, because there's a few others that maybe don't. I'll worry about that later.
And again, what this says is that you need to be invited to participate. Doesn't say you have to go, but I think we want to make sure everyone's invited and included, and
We don't want to run into this problem where people are functioning in a vacuum. Representative Hammond.
Yeah, that was just a poor attempt at a joke.
I know. We know that.
On page 2, line 21, I believe just a technical change here. We talked about adding or designee, and I think the word
designee
of the were stricken, were they not? And so just for the purpose of reading through there, I believe it should be or designee of the.
Okay.
Yeah, I keep up that.
Sure. An easier way to do that, I don't think you need to refer to of the Minnesota National Guard. It's clear enough who the Adjutant General is, so you can just say on line 2.21 after Adjutant General or the Adjutant General's designee, then strike of the Minnesota National, and on line 2.22 strike Guard.
Okay. All right, I'll incorporate that. Region, you need, anyone else need anything? Okay. Oh, I thought you said. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
My name is John Cox, and I'm the legislative chairman for the American Legion Department of Minnesota. Senator Vickerman and Representative Junkie and committee, I want to thank you for all you've done for the veterans this year. You've done a lot of work for us, and we appreciate that. Just have a couple of things setting in on, Mr. Mullen did, on the long-term, governor's long-term advisory council every meeting with Senator Ropes and Representative Severson. That long-term advisory council, from my memory and my notes, indicated that that long-term advisory council was going to take a look at all the veterans' homes and everything that had to do with the veterans' homes in the state of Minnesota to include the care of veterans throughout the state of Minnesota. If I'm wrong, maybe Senator Ropes or Senator Representative Severson could correct me. But in discussing this with folks throughout the Legion and everywhere, I don't think it's necessary to have this extra committee. The long-term advisory council is going to be doing this, and along with that, Gil, the new deputy commissioner, has his own little strategic planning committee within the veterans' home community out in Minneapolis to look at that. They did just have a health board inspection out there, came out very good. Some minor things, but you're going to find those. But I think I agree with Senator Vickerman and Senator Ropes that I absolutely see no need for this new strategic planning group that's going to be so big and so clumsy. It's going to be very hard to consult with all these people. And I think that long-term advisor council, which I understand has their doctor appointed now, and I'm sure that they will be meeting, and Tom Mullen happens to be a member of that. But looking at the, at the amendment, I think the amendment would be okay if we deleted in page 3, 3.8 through 3.24, and I think the rest of the amendment would suffice. I just see no need for that new advisory council. I think it's going to be very clumsy for Mr. Acevedo to get his work done, and the advisory council, that new advisory council working with him. And with that, I'll let Mr. Mullen talk. I know he's on that council.
And just before you go forward, right now we're not creating someone new, just so you know. They have a strategic planning group already in place within the department, and maybe you're not aware of that.
Yeah, I am.
It includes all the deputy commissioners, the finance officer, the regulatory quality assistance director, the legal department, the human resources director, the construction and maintenance person, the omnibus for older Minnesotans office is on there, the homes administrators are all on there, the directors of nursing from each home, and the legislative director and communications director. In addition, they are supposed to be consulting with the Commander's Task Force, the United Veterans Legislative Council, the CVSOs. Margaret Vessel is on that list of consultants. VAMC, VISN 23, the Senate and House Chairs
the National Guard, media, MHHA, Association of Minnesota Counties, MDH, Family Council, Ombudsman of the Board of Aging, the unions, legislative liaisons, Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, volunteer coordinators, chair of the advisory council, cemetery director, Fort Snelling director, and residents. That's already in place. So I don't think we're creating something that's bigger than that. In fact, most of what we did is already included there. We've added maybe a couple people that didn't show up on that list as folks being consulted. So this is a group, I just want to show you, this isn't a new group being created. This is a group that's already there within the department, and we're just simply asking them to report back to the legislature on some specific items of interest to the legislature. So I want to make that clear to the audience. I really appreciate your input, but I want to be very clear that, and the group you're sitting on is a separate entity that was just created by the governor out of the report that the task force came out of the working group this last year came up with. Please.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the of this commission. My name is Tom Mullen. I was on the Veterans Commission that Senator Ropes was also a member of, and now I'm a member of the Long-Term Care Advisory Committee. I guess I found a job somehow. I'm a former director of the VA Medical Center Minneapolis and a former administrator of the Veterans Home Minneapolis and also a former board member of the Veterans Home Program. None of this happened during my watch, by the way, all of this hitting the fan, so to speak, that occurred about 2-3 years ago. Just want to make that clear. I envisioned this whole process to be one of the commission initially setting up the advisory committee, which then this will be turned into legislation, I presume, during this session, making the advisory committee a group that will look at all that comes out of the Department of Veterans Affairs and make advice, counsel, whatever necessary to modify, change, or whatever the strategic planning group of the Department of Veterans Affairs comes up with. So the intent, I thought, was, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but my impression was that the advisory group was going to be advising the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs on what the strategic planning group came up with. In other words, take a look at it, see whether it meets all the needs of veterans, see whether it does the job that is expected of that commission, that advisory group, and then advise the commissioner so that he can move ahead with whatever plans he wants to do. I'm confused on this, why we need to have this in legislation. I mean, it seems to me it's already moving in that direction. And why do we need to have a separate group or have anything in legislation that talks about it? Now, I can't imagine, members, that the mayor of Minneapolis and all the other individuals who are indicated in this package are not going to be contacted, either by the advisory group or the strategic planning group. As the chairman pointed out, these are all going to be contacted anyway by either the strategic planning group or the advisory group. I just can't imagine that our advisory group is going to ignore the community, the veterans groups, and everybody else that's indicated here in this package. And certainly veterans forum work and so on are also going to be involved in. I'm a member of all these organizations. So my question simply is, I guess, if I'm allowed to make a question,
sir,
why, and I kind of followed along with what Senator Ropes brought up a minute ago, why do we need this package if we already think we have what we need to do the job?
So here'd be my answer, and I'm willing to do this if you'd like. Rather than on page one have the Department of Veterans Affairs Strategic Planning Group, which seems everyone thinks they're overlapping, I'd be happy to change that to the Long-Term Care Advisory Council. Then it's that group, Representative Ropes, it's the same group in both sections then that is doing this. It certainly won't be redundant. And
And then that just allows you to consult with these people, like you say you're going to anyway. But I'd be happy to, if you don't want to put it with that long-term, it seems to be that's one of the problems here. I'm happy to put your council in as the lead group here, if that's what you'd like to do.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Botter.
Just to get the name right, it is the Veterans Healthcare Advisory Council and not the Long-Term Care Advisory Council.
Okay. I'd be willing to put that group in as the lead on this, if that's what you're doing anyway, and I don't have a problem with that. Representative Bigham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe Senator Ropes can help me out on this, and I know that Chair Coonan is here. There's been a lot of discussion in our Veterans Committee about the educational needs or desires of the returning veterans, and I'm wondering, between that and some other reintegration ideas or needs, has your group discussed those options? Because I know that when you said that the group that your amendment, Mr. Chair, talks about is more of a statewide, we're looking at demographics so that we can have a long-term strategic plan for all these. I'm assuming that that would include educational or occupational retraining and more of the reintegration implementation that folks here have worked a long time on prior to you and I becoming members of the legislature. So I was wondering if your group and Representative Severson serves on that too, have they discussed those kinds of options relating to this? Because I think that's a very important step in serving our veterans. So I don't know if somebody can address that.
Senator Rule.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bingham, thank you for the question. If I recall correctly, we have two members of that other task force here as well, Representative Severson and Mr. Moen. We did talk about the needs of younger vets coming back, especially amputees that are going to need to be served by some long-term care facilities, and that our model right now mostly deals with the aging end of things. So we were looking at a continuum of care. So that is one of the things we have directed that committee to deal with. And Representative Junkie, to your point about whose name is on the title, I guess that doesn't make any difference to me. I'm just concerned that both groups are going to be doing some of the same overlapping type of work. I appreciate the testimony from the two gentlemen at the table. One of the questions I had, and I tend to agree with Mr. Cox, if we put into statute particular people to make sure to consult, like the mayor of Minneapolis, for example, and I don't have any reason to make sure that he's legislatively written into statute or not, but it begs the question then, if this group is looking at statewide impact, should we also be making sure that the mayor of Silver Bay and the mayor of Laverne and the mayor of the other communities are written in statute as well? So that's one of the problems we get into when you start listing people that must be consulted, that you're going to forget.
Well, Senator Ropes, again, this isn't statute, this is session law. So we're not writing anything into statute. And it's, the Minneapolis is for that Minneapolis. We didn't do a separate section for Silver Bay or Laverne or anything else. We did a separate section for Minneapolis because there's been a lot of discussion on Minneapolis this year, and that's why it's in there. But again, I'm willing to put that group on here so there's no redundancy whatsoever.
Mr. Chair, I'm talking to Christine Keel from the department, and I guess I agree that the paragraph A should stay there, because we must remember that that long-term advisory that the governor appointed, they are strictly advisory. They are not telling people what to do. They're only advisory, right, where paragraph A pretty much leaves it up to the commissioner.
That's the internal group with the commissioner and the deputy.
Right.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, what's the difference? They're both advisory committees.
But the, as he just pointed out, this group that I reference is actually made up of Commissioner Dyrud, his deputies, the people that are the decision makers, the homes directors, the people that are decision makers in the department. Mm-hmm. The group now that Representative Ropes and Bingham talked about is an advisory group.
They're strictly advisory.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
But I think, Chairman, if we, Mr. Cox, I think if we left paragraph A and an advisory council in there and let them take care of the problem, and study the state, I think that, I don't know, that's my own idea, and I don't know if
Christine agrees with that or not, unfortunately.
Well, we certainly, we certainly appreciate it, and I hope this group brings back a lot more than what's on here.
Mm-hmm.
But frankly, these were items of interest in this last legislative session, and we are the legislature, and we do want some answers coming back to us.
I totally agree.
And I can appreciate that, that you folks, I know, want answers to some of this, too, and want to continue working with us on a lot of this. But well, I'm very trusting of the department, and I have full respect for Commissioner Dyrud. I really want to direct some of the questions that have been lingering in this legislative session to them so that we get specifics back. And I hope we get a lot more back from those study groups. As outlined in the reports and other things that they're working on, and I know they've already been meeting.
They've already had about 4 or 5 meetings, Mr. Acevedo has, and they've made great strides out there in their strategic planning.
And again, I would encourage them to start inviting some of these people to those meetings, because we haven't been invited yet. And that's why this shows up here.
I think they're in the beginning stages, and once they get something on paper, I think then we'll... you'll hear from them, but they're right now.
Ropes and Severson and others should be invited to those meetings, as well as members of the committees, if they're interested in sitting in, because you were intimately involved. You're a nurse, I know, and there's a lot of people that are really wanting this to work.
Well, I'm sure they are, and we all in the veterans organizations want it to work, too. The advisory council, you must remember, hasn't had a meeting yet, either. I don't know when there, maybe Tom knows, but I think when he gets his plans put together somewhat, they'll probably meet with the advisory council, and then they'll be bringing you folks in there to let you know what's going on. But I know he's working very hard.
We're getting close to moving on. Representative Bingham.
Yep. Is it getting close to month's time then, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
That's the thing when he's speaker, he says that. I have a question for the witnesses and then a quick question for you. Is it your intent of the long-term care group to talk about the educational and occupational needs of the of not just returning veterans, but veterans in general?
Right.
I mean, you have some...
Absolutely. Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, from the advisory council, we will be looking at all aspects of veterans care, including education. Whether these recommendations go through or not, or advice go through or not, is a question mark. But we certainly will be looking at every. We have members of our commission, of our advisory group. Let me make sure I get this clear. That are talented and professional in those areas. So I think we're going to have a lot of discussion in that range, and also healthcare, everything else that affects the returning veterans as well as our older veterans, myself and others.
All right, and Mr. Chair, I don't need to ask you a question.
Representative Conan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the section here I want to talk about is Section E, line 3.17 through line 3.24. This section, of course, is talking about the project you've got going in Candiahai County, and I understand and realize that you've been working on this for several years. The question I have about this is that there are other project proposals, and I'm speaking kind of selfishly here too. Montevideo has a proposal out for a veterans home. This one has pretty definite language directing the department on what to do. I'm sure the department is fully aware and up to speed on this project and others, including Montevideo. If it turns out that the Candiahai project is the one that looks like it should go forward, this language really doesn't change much. If the department and Washington decide that maybe another project should go, then I see this as being somewhat of a problem. I don't know where that decision's going to go, but I guess I'd like to hear you comment on that.
Representative Conan, this project is already on the recommended list that came out last year. It's well beyond any other project. It's been planned for 3 or 4 years. It's a mental health facility. It's not a Veterans Home Board what we used to think of a standard care, which is what Montevideo was talking about. That is not what this is. This is TBI, PTSD, geriatric, psychiatric care facility. This is already, we've already given the money to this from the legislature. The pre-design is done with this. It's already on the federal list of approved projects and was already on the department's list of recommended building projects. So it is really different than what you or anyone else is talking about as far as homes go. And so, again, the money still has to be realized from the non-federal grant monies, and that, frankly, is still being discussed this year as we come to the last couple weeks of the legislature. But this in no way, shape, or form has changed anything that's out there. It's a it's actually utilizing mental health workers that have been waylaid by the downsizing of the regional treatment center out there. This is one of AFSCME's number one projects in the state to get completed. So I appreciate what you're saying, but this one is different than anything else now or in the future that folks are talking about, because this one's already in place, already on the list, already planned, and is already moving forward.
Chairman Junkie, does this take up some of the bed capacity that's available to the state?
This would, we're all under a certain cap of beds in the state for nursing care beds. So it would depend on how many nursing care beds were in here as opposed to a clinical space, research space, or other needs that may be realized. So the answer is yes, but the answer is I don't know how many at this point and where we're at. And that's a day-to-day fluctuation in all our homes across the state.
Mr. Chairman, the Montevideo group has made their application to Washington, so they are that far along. And as far as raising the state share for the construction, they're going to do that locally. In fact, the veterans clinic that's there, they built that with local dollars, so there is a commitment from the community to do that kind of thing.
And again, yours is a veterans home facility.
Right, yeah.
This is not.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, considering that there is a limited bed capacity available to the state, I'm going to ask you if you'd consider an oral amendment to, on the end of line 3.23, to delete the word proceed, and with on line 3.24, delete the word with, and on line 3.23, after must, insert the word consider. So it would read, the commissioner must consider the project.
I'm not sure why we wouldn't proceed with it. It's a project that's on the list recommended at this point. This is not a new project, Representative Conan.
Mr. Chairman, has the department already decided that this is the one that's going to go?
Conan, yes. This was on the recommended list to the bonding committee this year as one of seven recommended projects.
I understand that, Mr. Chairman. Has the department decided that this is the project that's going to go?
The answer is yes. It was on the recommended list. This and Hastings and Silver Bay and Minneapolis were the four building projects that were on the recommended list from the department this year to the bonding committee, which I sit on.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm still going to test this and offer that amendment.
Okay. And again, I don't want to take that amendment. I wouldn't consider it friendly. Any discussion on that?
Mr. Chair?
Yep.
Maybe we should see if anybody in the audience would kind of weigh in on this. But before you do that, I want to go back to the advisory board. I've been around here a long time, and pretty quick, the advisory board thinks they are the board. So we got to be sure that they know what their job is, not to run it. It's just advice. Second thing, you know, we all these are great. I'd like to build more. But I also have been before our finance committee in a very, very explicit statement, we don't have funds, and that certain person is not going to take it out of her health care to fund these things. Anybody can build a home. You can build one, Lyon. But you have to find a way to pay for the operation. That's what the big sticker is. So I just want to be sure that, you know, if we do that, we're going to have to consult with Senator Bergen. It's her jurisdiction if she wants to do it. So I just want to make that clear that she will have the final say, or one of the final say. Is anybody from the audience want to weigh in?
Any discussion on that Conant oral amendment?
Could I hear what it is again, Mr. Chair?
Representative Conant, you want to repeat your amendment?
Yes, on line 3.23, if you go over to the comma, starting there, the commissioner must, and then delete the word proceed, insert the word consider, and then on line 3.24, delete the word with, and then finish out the sentence, the project. So it would read, the commissioner must consider the project.
I guess I don't think that gets us anywhere. Again, as far as your amendment, I'm not sure what you're trying to get at. Again, this project is already ready to go. It was in the House bonding bill. It was on the Veterans Department recommended list. It's already been considered, Representative Conant. For the last 3 years, it's been considered, planned, money put into it. It's ready to go. So I'm not sure what we're considering on that.
Mr. Chairman, the sentence reads the commissioner must consider, not that it doesn't say the legislature. And I know that
he's already done that and weighed in with the consideration. So I'm trying to follow what changes.
As segment Senator Vickerman brought up, any project has a ways to go yet. There's no way they're completing, including what he brought up is the operating money for any facility. And so with that in mind, I see that there hasn't been a final decision made yet, and so that's why I just assume use the word consider as...
But then it would be, what Senator Vickerman said then is the Legislative Finance Committee with oversight must consider. I would add that to that, not what you're doing, the commissioner. We're the ones that have to give the money to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sticking point. As Senator Vickerman said, I would add the language as a friendly amendment that the legislative committees with financial oversight must consider.
Where would you insert that, Mr. Chairman?
If non-state funds sufficient to cover the non-federal are secured prior to the, I would change this then, prior to project initiation, the legislative committees with financial oversight of the ongoing operational cost shall consider the project.
And then you would drop the word the commissioner must.
Yes.
I can live with that.
Kind of get that, and can you square that away a little better? You don't have, I mean, you can wordsmith it later, but I think you understand the gist that, again, if all the monies are secured, which we're close to that happening, prior, and frankly it's true with any, as Senator Vickerman said, with any facility, before any of them can, and I agree with you there, before any of them can proceed, both the House and the Senate committees with fiscal responsibility for these budgets need to do that.
Mr. Chair, does that mean finance would have to approve projects or consider projects?
Well, they have to consider them to approve them. You can't.
No.
You can build it, but it'll sit there empty,
right,
unless you have the financial okay. And that's what I'm asking for here. Before it goes forward, the fiscal committees have to okay it. which is, I think, what's done now, but that we can put that in there for comfort language. Mr. Bodden?
Mr. Chairman, just trying to make sure I understand it. It's on line 3.23, after the comma, insert, before project initiation, the legislative committees with jurisdiction over veterans affairs and healthcare finance shall consider the project
period, and then cost.
Pardon me?
The project's operational cost. Or the operational cost. What we're talking about is not the building cost. They've already taken care of that. It's the operational cost that needs to be squared away and okay, then a finance. Obviously, it's a tail. And it's probably not a next. It's not something we deal with today because the tails are probably 3 years out. They don't even show up in the next fiscal year, but they are something that will be coming after the project is built and initiated. So we're just asking the fiscal committees to review these projects, any of them, before we go ahead. And frankly, that would should probably hold true with Minneapolis, too, as we revamp or upgrade or change the operational abilities of that campus. But that's not the section we're in.
So, Mr. Chairman, maybe another way to state that would be, before the commissioner may proceed with the project, the legislative committees with jurisdiction over veterans affairs and healthcare finance shall consider the operational cost of the project, and then delete the remainder of the sentence that says the commissioner...
Well, it's not, except those are different committees in the House and the Senate. In the House, our committee has the oversight. In the Senate, the health, at this point, the Health and Human Services Finance Division has oversight. However, I don't know who's going to have it next year. So somehow it says specified has oversight of the Veterans Affairs budget. They really don't have to name the committee. It's just who oversees that budget.
Mr. Chairman, then we could just substitute instead of, well, it could say the legislative committees with jurisdictions over the Veterans Home budget.
That'd be good. And I'd accept that as friendly Representative Conan and incorporate it in.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I can restate it one more time. I'd like to make sure everyone understands it. So on line 3.23, delete everything after the period and insert, before the commissioner may proceed with the project, the legislative committees with jurisdiction over the Veterans Home budget shall consider the operational cost of the project, and then delete everything on line 3.24 before the period.
After the, that's between the comma and the period then.
Correct.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I'd incorporate that. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I apologize for not being in uniform here today. Wasn't anticipating testifying, but I do appreciate Senator Robes bringing forward the issue here. I think in that committee, one of the things we looked at was the long-term care across the state, what those implications were, and really, I think the crux of the of what came out of that committee was we have to relook at how we deliver services, as much as you've been talking about, Mr. Chair. But my take on this is it's a little premature on this particular issue to begin designating sites before the committee has had a chance to report in and say, what are the demographics, what are the health care issues in the particular areas that would support those facilities. And I just feel like from the result of that commission, and Senator Rose can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there was a vision of going out to the entire state saying, what are the areas that we can best service our veterans in most economically and with the least impact on them and with the local community. And so I think when we're talking about doing what is being proposed here, we're jumping ahead saying we're going to predispose that there are certain areas that are going to be more friendly than others. And I think the study could come back and say that's not in fact the case. And so I would urge members, I wasn't going to engage in this, but I do not think that this particular part is necessary. I think it's going to be redundant, even though it may be already established. But I think to step back, take a timeline that is appropriate for all of the work that the committee put in this summer, and I was just kind of a watch along and had a couple of inputs, but we had some tremendous mental power in there, Tom being one of them, that really did a lot of hard lifting in this process. And they didn't do it because they were getting paid. They did it because they believe in the mission. And so I think we dishonored them if we continue to move ahead with something that is premature and that is going to cut them out of the pattern.
Well, Severson, we're not dishonoring anyone by asking questions that the legislature wants answered. And that's what those three pages are. It's questions that we've been struggling with in our committee for this last year. And we want some specific answers back from them. And I'm trying to follow why that would be a problem with anyone to find out veterans' numbers around the state. Yes, I know they're probably already doing that. But those are specific questions that we have that we would like to come back to us as a legislative body. So I don't think it's disrespecting anyone's work. It's affirming their work. And it's asking them to please bring this back. You are an important group. You're the ones that can do this for us. Otherwise, we'd be hiring someone outside the Department of Veterans Affairs. But they have these groups, and we want to utilize them. And so I'm missing that point.
All right, Mr. Chair, and I think those are the criteria in the long-range and in long-term care commission that's going out with the one that you've already approved. I think that is the criteria that is valid and you're talking about. And, you know, I'm not...
And again, we asked if they wanted to insert that name into here, and the answer was no. They'd rather stick with the Veterans Strategic Care Group on this. So, you know, I'm willing to assign it to another group, but if this was the group that was just indicated that would rather do this and not the separate group, advisory group that's been set up. Okay. Okay, thank you, Representative Stevenson. All right, to the amendment members, as amended, Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to take about a 3-minute recess so my committee can, if that's okay? 5 minutes?
Okay, we'll take a bathroom break for about 5 minutes.
Thank you.
We're going to recess for about another half hour. 10:20, we'll be back. We're just waiting for an amendment to come down. Once we get it, we'll get going, and we hope to move a lot more quickly after that amendment gets here. As soon as we get the ag researcher, the veterans folks say it's going to be a half hour, 45 minutes to get their amendment ready, but we will start going through the ag provisions as soon as Colby gets here. We have the Senate researcher. He's on his way down. So we'll work through some ag stuff as quickly as we can. No one wants to be here longer than we have to today. So as soon as Colby gets here, we'll reconvene. Okay, we will start with the ag provisions. We have our ag research staff here. I guess we'll take the ag spreadsheet like we did with the veterans and start moving through it. And I guess I'll let staff direct that. And we have some amendments, obviously, in the packets as we get to different sections.
Mr. Chair, members, I just want to make sure everyone has the latest ag, same, similar, and different sheets. In the top right corner, it should be dated May 2nd, 2008 at 7:44 a.m.
Yep.
There's an older version in your packets, but this is the new version, which has, in the first section, the items left to be decided, and in the second, the items that have already been determined with some indication of what was adopted. Mr. Chair, the first item on the agriculture list to be decided is the livestock investment grant.
Okay. And there is a, this is right away on page one, there is an amendment in your packet entitled A76. And Senator Vickerman will move the A76 amendment. What it does is basically the commissioner, it's similar to what we did, frankly, with the flooding situation in southeast Minnesota. We actually used livestock investment grants there, and we allowed the commissioner to determine a need for that money and basically report back to the committees and get an okay on it. But to move it ahead, this would replace the first-come, first-serve language. As it sits now, and by the way, that appropriation's been reduced from $2 million to about $1.2 million because of the cuts we had to do the other day to our targets. So with the limited amount of money we have left, we're going to allow the commissioner, again, to set some priorities for that money based on criteria that they will establish, probably Boerboom and others over there in the department, and bring back to us. And again, I will reference the flood again. This is important because of a situation like that. If we have a flood again in any area of the state or a drought, and there's some hardship with particular producers or areas, but they want to continue with a project, they'd be able then to prioritize those areas and those dollars, and I think it's important to give them some discretion rather than saying first come, first serve. Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, that amendment is not in our packet.
It's in the okay, staff can get that handed out or phoned. Oh, you got it?
It's in the folder that was on.
Everyone has it, so except you.
It might be in your folder. Folder. Or not.
Do you have a folder with amendments? A couple senators don't have the amendment. Everyone else does. Yep. Dana, why don't you go get copies? Mm-hmm. Right, when we get to it, you can just put it out. Here, I got an extra one someone can have.
Mr. Chairman, I have an extra one as well.
I'm fine. Who doesn't have one yet?
I'll share with Bill.
Okay, everyone got one to look at? All right. The A76 Amendment discussion.
Once again, Mr. Chair,
it would be nice if we didn't have to cut money out, but that's the way it is, and we had to do something.
Okay. We also have another amendment coming from Senator Dill, or pieces of one, after this.
Mr. Chair, could I just offer some consultation on this? My only concern is that you're putting this in the statute, and it's, you know, the special session money was kind of one time, and now what you're saying is this is going to be ongoing, and there are no rulemaking provisions. I mean, the commissioner is just going to make these decisions on an ongoing basis. I actually recommended to Senator Dill that this be put in the rider of the appropriation in House File 1812, to basically for this year, to allow that for the money that's appropriated, but I wasn't sure about putting this in the statutory language, kind of ongoing, you know, in kind of more of the permanent language. It's up to you, but that was my advice, was we maybe don't want to do this for ongoing, but only for the money that's out there this year, kind of rethink it for the next time you put money into it.
But it also, parts of it delete the first come, first serve stuff, don't they?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it doesn't just review them in the order which they're received. It doesn't say that the commissioner has to give out grants.
We can lay it aside if we want to do it as a rider. If you and Mr. Sullivan will put it in the amendment that's going over to 1812.
Mr. Chairman, that was my recommendation.
Sure. Everyone fine with that?
And the other thing, issue is, I also talked to Senator Dill about putting the ranking minority members. I know that wasn't done in the special session, but I didn't know if you wanted to include Senator Dill as the ranking minority member. So
that's fine.
I think yeah.
That's fine. So why don't you redo that, put it in that amendment.
Jim, well, let's see if Senator Dill does offer that amendment. I've worked out something for 1812 with him that relates to also some of the changes that he's looking for in here. We can talk about that.
Senator Vickman withdraws the 876. Senator Dill, do you have an amendment you want to talk about?
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering, Mr. Kanash, should I have both these amendments passed out at the same time?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, I think so, because one is actually to this document, and the other one is to 1812, although the one that's to this document says 1812 on the top. You can just ignore that. It was inadvertently left in the amendment. But yeah, both of them should go. One of them is to 1812 and also includes an amendment to the rider. And the rest of the amendment just amends both the language in here and the language in 1812. So it's a comparable amendment. You'd want to change it in both places because it's for the statutory language is changed the same. That's why I did it for both, because if you're going to make a recommendation for 1812 too.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Dill and I worked on some of this language yesterday. Certainly open to interpretation and corrections and additions if you like, but there's some stuff that Senator Dill was concerned about, so we were picking away at it kind of all day yesterday.
Let's look at the DV amendment. There's the one we'll work on right now that's in front of you members. Senator Dale moves the DV amendment, which is the amendment to this bill. And Senator Dale, I know we've talked about this, but if you want to explain your amendment, I think there's some pieces that might be acceptable and others that might take more debate, and I don't know if we want to do them, but...
Okay. Okay, we'll get the side-by-side. Mr. Chairman, members, if you look at the side-by-side comparison on page R1 in the amendment, the first change is on lines 2.5 and 2.6. I'm narrowing the scope of the number of species available for this grant program by deleting mules, ratatae, and llamas. And then if you go to... Thank you. The second page, R2, and you go on, now we're looking on the house side now, and you go down to line 3.13, where, and keying off the amendment on the page, on line 1.7, 1.8 of the amendment, we're changing that sentence on the House side on lines 3.13. We're deleting the words authorized to farm, and on lines 3.14, deleting subdivision 3, and then on lines 3.13, we're inserting some language which makes it more clear that this money is to be used only by farms that are identified by their business organization in their section 500.24, to try to make it very clear that this is a kind of a for family farms or sole proprietorships or family farm corporations and all those organizations that are listed there, and make sure that General Foods and some of these other big corporations can't get at this money.
And again, Senator, I guess I'd ask our staff to weigh in on this now. We do reference 500.24 already, and under, I don't have that definition in front of me, but I suggest there are some income limitations or some stipulations on being classified a farm in the state, that a certain percent of your income has to be coming from the operation. Or what? Do either of you know the definitions of farming that we're removing and now trying to redefine?
Mr. Chairman, I think the issue is the way the House language reads it. It's basically if you're authorized to farm in the state, and one of the issues is poultry is exempt from the corporate farm law, so they are authorized because they're just not included. And regardless of whether, and they can organize in any fashion that they want in the state, and that this could be construed the way the House language was, and the way the language was in 1812, that it could be broader than just those authorized entities within the anti-corporate farm law.
And I don't have a problem with that. It's not, as long as we're not mucking around with, I mean, what's bothering me is the $10,000. Is there some already statutory reference as to percent of income or other things that qualify you as a farmer? And that now we're somehow redefining a farm operation.
Chairman, I think that on lines 1.7, 1.8, this doesn't have anything really to do with the $10,000. That's to kind of eliminate the hobby farms. But in the corporate farm law, no, it has nothing to do with the size of the farm. It's all to do with just basically who's eligible to own farmland and farm in the state. Because, you know, the reason it says to own farmland and operate a farm is because banks are eligible to own farmland. You don't want banks to be able to get this money when they've repossessed the farm, but they can hold farmland for a limited time, and then they have to have somebody else, an actual farmer, operate the farm. So what this does is it clarifies that they have to actually be able to own farmland and operate a farm to receive this money.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll get to the $10,000 in just a minute. If I just go to the next issue on the amendment. And that deals with 3.16 on the House side. It says hold an appropriate feedlot registration and I'm really picking up the language on the Senate side over here. If you look over on the Senate side, 3.18, it says hold a feedlot registration if required. And we're really, really taking Senate language on this particular line. And that's because some people don't need to have a feedlot registration. Some counties have different regulations, but the state rule is that if you have more than 10 animal units in a shoreline area, you need to register. Or if you have more than 50 animal units in non-shoreline, you need to register. So if you have less than 50 animal units in a non-shoreline area, you don't need to register according to state law, and many counties don't require you to either. So for a small producer applying for this money, you're suggesting here that an appropriate feedlot registration is a requirement, but we're only saying that if it is required by law. So,
mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I think this is purely technical. I think that the committee actually asked me about this during the hearing on this bill, and with the House language was in at the time, and I read it the way that I wrote it on the Senate side, and they said, well, can we just say it that way? Because I think what your intent was that if there's one required, because, you know, for winter feeding areas, we don't require one. Also, you know, there are also other pasture locations where, sure, where a feedlot permit's not required. This was just to clarify it for committee members.
See? Mm-hmm. So if somebody with 40 beef cows is applying for a grant, they'd be eligible even if they don't have to register, as long as they're not in shoreline areas. Okay, then the next item to talk about is the thing you brought up earlier on line 1.11 of the amendment, have a projected annual gross revenue from farming of at least $10,000. And the reason I'm putting that in there, and maybe the argument should be made that we should leave it up to the Department of Ag to figure this out along with consultation with those of us that are listed in to be consulted with, but as my recollection is 15 years ago, the farm management experts didn't suggest that you don't add another enterprise on your farm unless it generates at least $10,000 worth of gross farm revenue. Now it's 15 years later, and I don't know what the recommendation is, but it's probably more like $20,000. And I feel like we want to subsidize farmers that are trying to increase their production to the point where they can at least generate enough money to justify their time and investment and so forth. And if you're moving down a path where we had it before, the way the language was before we, and the way it is right now, we haven't changed it yet, we could wind up subsidizing exurban horse owners with two horses and a pasture, and I don't think it's in the interest of doing that, or somebody with 100 chickens or one ostrich or six beef cows or something like that. I think we're going to subsidize people to get started with an enterprise that's going to generate at least enough revenue so they get some.
And again, I don't have a problem with that. It's just I didn't know if there was a number. I bet some of our farming friends out there know it's maybe a lower number, frankly, that probably qualifies you on a USDA farm.
The USDA definition of a farm is a place that generates over $1,000 of annual farm income, right, of gross farm revenue.
So you want to make it 10 for this.
So I'm just saying that if we're going to subsidize a farm enterprise, a livestock enterprise, the farm should be generating at least $10,000 worth of farm income to try to eliminate some of those that are strictly hobby farmers and so forth. And really to generate, you really need to be up around $250,000 in farm sales to really generate enough income to feed your family, service debt, and all that sort of thing. But at least this establishes one benchmark. And then the other thing that I eliminate in this amendment, which I consider very important, and that's if you go to page R3 on line 3.26 on the House side, there's a sentence that says, the commissioner must place any additional eligible applications on a waiting list, and notwithstanding subdivision 2, paragraph C, give them priority during the next fiscal year. I think we don't want to do that because we don't know what we're going to do with this program. I'm sure we're going to want to reevaluate and make sure it's appropriate for the next biennium. And to have a whole bunch of people on a waiting list that we promised to serve in this legislation, and it's a first-come, first-served basis the way we've got it here, it's just not appropriate. I think people should have to reapply in the next biennium and not have their name on a waiting list from the last biennium. Now, Mr. Knopf, did I miss something in my presentation on this amendment?
Mr. Chairman, sir, Bill, not that I can. No.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Schultz.
Thank you. I think, and Mr. Knopf, in the Senate committee, there are some definitions, we talked about definitions of farms, and that's why llamas and other things were included in that. Is this, are we trying to re-identify what a farm is by taking out some of these? Is it going to give us a third or fourth definition of a farm?
Well, Mr. Chairman, there are, in Penascogan, there are a lot of definitions of farming in the statutes and of livestock. This, what this does is say, what Senator Dill is trying to do is eliminate some of the animals that would be considered livestock in other areas of statute to say basically that we only want to farm, or we only want to provide grants for those entities that are basically farming with marketable products, I think is how he stated it. So it does, but I don't think there's a problem. I mean, you're just defining it for this section, basically, of what of who's eligible. You don't want to follow of any other definition of livestock, but you are narrowing down the definition of livestock for this program.
Any more discussion? I mean, Senator Dill explaining, I guess I don't know if we're going to hear from the Raritan Llama or Mule lobby on this. I know Senator Vickman's gotten calls from some Mule people, so I don't know. It's Senator Scogan's in my language. I don't know why you didn't think of this when it was going through the Senate process. Now it's showing up here right now, but I don't have a problem with most of what you're doing here is technical, especially on the corporate farm stuff, so we want to make sure of that. I have no problem with tightening that up. And the 10,000 gross revenue, of course, you should be making that if you're a full-time farmer, because that's gross revenues. Once you take your deductions, and expenses, that doesn't leave much for net revenue if that's all you're grossing. So every farmer would have a gross revenue of that much. Representative Tremba?
Well, Mr. Chair, I haven't seen this stuff before, and I have some, I need to look at it a little bit. I mean, I usually go by USDA pretty much when I'm dealing with farm animals, whatever. I think we should just wait and do it next year.
And it is something that the commissioner can put together a priority and show us as they're coming through how they would prioritize it so that we're not doing something on the fly here, especially with that revenue. It would be one of my questions on it. I guess, Senator Dill, I'd like to adopt the portions that tighten up the corporate stuff. I think that's good. If staff could adopt those sections of it, no one's got problems with that, right? I mean, we don't want Genio Foods or those folks participating. So could you tell us what section that is? I'm going to split this up a little bit.
Mr. Chairman, if you want to do that, 1.7 through 1.9 are the part on who's eligible as far as based on the corporate farm law. And then the other thing is if you wanted to just take the Senate language on the if required on the feedlot permit to clarify that, you'd have to do 112 through 113 minus the 3 and insert 4. So you would just delete everything after 16 comma before the word delete. So you would delete that. So it would be so just page 3, line 16, delete inappropriate and insert and after registration, insert if required. So you would just adopt that part if you wanted to do that. That didn't sound like a very controversial technical change.
And then, Mr. Chairman, you may want to consider deleting that sentence on 3.26 that puts people on the waiting list.
No. Well, again, that one, I have a little problem with that because, again, until we fund this thing, which a fiscal note on this is $10 million a year, and until we fund it, if you come in and put an application in, but because of funding, you're unable to secure that application, why shouldn't you be considered the next round and a priority? Because you are ready to go and you are funded. You're saying to start all over, and I disagree with that. You know, unless we're going to fund the program to its full fiscal note, a farmer who's ready to go with the project, just because they don't secure the funding this year, should be forwarded into the next year and given a priority because they were ready to go and they are in the year. They're waiting and ready. Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, the paragraph we're going to put in the finance bill, which is on the other amendment, talks about having the Department of Agriculture set up a competitive eligibility criteria.
Right.
For grants.
And based on that, Senator Dale, then, if you have qualified under that criteria, you should be given priority the next year. Once you've qualified under that set of criteria, all we're saying is once you've qualified and the department says you're eligible for this grant, but now money has discontinued, you should, you know, if you're doing your pasture development this year and you didn't get the money, but you did qualify for it, you should be able to get it the next year then as a priority. Because again, you're qualifying under what the commissioner is going to set up. It's not first come, first serve, but you're given a priority next year because you've already qualified under that scenario. Is the
well, Mr. Chairman, I've asked Mr. Knopf about this. Mr. Knopf and members, if you look on page R3 at the top of the page, 3.23, under process, it says the commissioner shall review completed applications and award grants to eligible applicants in the order in which the applications were received by the commissioner.
Well, we're changing that.
So, okay, is it changing my amendment or your amendment?
Changing.
Well, it was in your amendment, Mr. Chairman, and actually,
right.
So you probably do want to do that in addition. It's just, I shall review completed applications and then and delete and award grants.
Right. So we'll pick up that language that was in mine after this. We want to do one amendment at a time, but
yeah.
But we will do that, Senator Dill. So it's clear you've already qualified, and where you've come down to the thing is once you've qualified based on that criteria, and we'll adopt that, then you should have that priority going into the next budget round because you've qualified and your application's still laying there ready to go. But I don't want to
delete that. If the way it works out, we get rid of the sentence about saying you get your money dependent on what the postmark is on your application.
Right.
We get rid
gone.
Of that.
That's gone.
And then we go to the next year, and we got some reservoir of applications that have not been treated yet or funded yet. If they fall into the category where they go through the competitive bidding or competitive process, the Department of Agriculture, so that's okay. But I do not want a system where they're still in an order where they
no.
because of the way they
but came. They're given priority because they qualified. The
okay,
previous.
Well, forget all that language so it works out that way. That's
so,
that's
members, fine. Let's move Senator Dill moves lines, or I'll split it, lines 1.7 through 1.9, and then lines 1.12 through 1.13 as amended by staff to make it fit. That's what we're on right now, and I think that's non-controversial on those. It's not the money, and it isn't even the removing of animals at this point. Representative Tremba?
Mr. Chair, did you include 1.11?
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay.
Lines, again, to be clear, 1.7, 1.8, 1.9, 1.12, and 1.13, with the corrections on 1.12. Okay? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I have a suggestion.
Okay.
I'll drop line 1.11 in the amendment and let the Department of Ag worry
okay.
about that. But I would like to run up the flagpole this idea of narrowing the species where this is available by eliminating the mules, llamas, the ostriches, and emus.
Does anyone here or in the audience have a problem with removing ratatae, llamas, and mules?
Okay.
Representative Tremba.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, but llamas are pretty famous right now with the fabrics and things that are going, and they're making an awful lot of money. So I would say that we should take a look at some of these and not just pick them up right now.
So we have someone would like to leave llamas.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I keep getting back to this idea of Jerusalem artichokes and how big a fiasco that was, and it's happened time and time again where people get into producing a product and the only market for it is other people that want to buy them for breeding stock, and then pretty soon you get the market saturated and there's no place to go with them. And it doesn't seem to me it's in the best interest of the of the taxpayer to be subsidizing people getting into production where there's not really a market out there. And In the case of llamas, the last time we had a hearing on this, which was just a week or two ago, somebody in the audience came up to me and she said that on the llama farm she worked on, they cut the hair, clipped the hair, sheared the hair off, but there's no place to sell it, and they got it stored in the basement of the house, hoping that the market eventually shows up. Just like a Jerusalem artichoke, you finally saturated the market for seed and there was no place else to go with it.
Well, Senator Dill, I guess at this point I'd side with Representative Tremba, and I suspect we might have more than three against changing that right now. I don't want to limit anyone. If you want to be the biggest llama grower in the United States, I want to help you do it in Minnesota. You know, and I can't predict that they're coming or not, and I can't predict any of these others either, and they are livestock included in our statutes, and I'd rather be all-inclusive. I don't think it'll ever be used. I mean, that's your argument, and that's fine, but why exclude people and then have to revisit it later? So I can't predict the future and who's going to need this money, and so at this point, I guess I wouldn't be supportive of changing it now. We can look at this in future years, and after the program's been up and running a few years, who's utilizing it and who's not. So rather than debate it, we can either vote Senator Dill, or you can withdraw that part. Whatever you want to do.
Mr. Chair, the commissioner has the ultimate say on whether or not you're going to get that money anyway. So.
Well, since I recognize Representative Junkie is having a lot of power around here, I'll skip the vote part. But I have one other small suggestion.
Okay.
And that's on page R1, lines 2.12. Where we say lanes used by livestock returning from pasture to a central location. I would like to delete the words returning from and insert the words that connect.
Okay.
And add an S at the end of the word pasture. So it'll read lanes used by livestock that connect pastures to a central location.
That makes sense. Any discussion on that oral amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. Senator Dill, so that's all we're doing on your amendment right at this point?
Mr. Chairman, I didn't know if you wanted to, I mean, you've got kind of a combination of things. You've got the A76, and then...
I was just going to move to that. Are there pieces of that now to put in that makes that priority language you talked about?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think if you took your A76 amendment and just deleted the new language from it, so basically you're striking that first sentence. And then I know this is a little complicated. You've got several amendments. You also have an A41 amendment to 1812. If you want to take a look at what Senator Dill had for the rider in the budget bill, and you can't adopt that here, but at least you can kind of give an idea as to where you want to go with this. And if you look at 1.3 to 1.8, you see that it says up to 3% of the appropriation may be used for administration of the grant program. That was a request from the department to be able to have some money for administration. And then this is a commissioner in consultation with the chairs and ranking members of the House and Senate. Ag Finance Division shall develop competitive eligibility criteria and may allocate grants on a needs basis. And then for 2009, the commissioner shall give priority to dairy, beef, and hog producers.
Well, again, we don't want to do that last line, I suspect, after last discussion. And we're not going to make the decision here today on the 3%, so it's the middle.
It's the middle, there. Right.
And you want to take that, incorporate that into the A76, or I mean, it's a combo. We'll take that language.
Well, Mr. Chairman, do you want that in the statute then to state it that way? I mean, if you want, that's fine. I just, like I said, I'd recommend the Senator Dill not to put that in the statute. Okay. But if you want it, that's fine.
Well, we do want a competitive grant. Again, and that's what Senator Dill wants, and I think that's what the authors of the bill, original bill, want, too.
So basically, Mr. Chairman, what you're going to do then is somebody would move the A76 amendment.
Okay, I'll move that.
With and replace the language on 1.4 to 1.6 with a sentence that begins at the end of, after the period on 1.4 through 1.7 up through the period.
Okay.
And replace the language in the amendment with that.
I would move that incorporation. Folks follow, again, it's just changing that first paragraph so that now it'll say it's not first come, first serve, but it's determined on a need basis by the commissioner. And again, then that follows with that not taking up that priority next year thing, and we talked about it. So, and we'll let staff correct that when we're done here, too, but that's, we know the intent. If it doesn't fit exactly, that's what we're doing.
Questions? Seeing none, all those, Mr. Sullivan.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, members, if I can just clarify, then the decision is to put that in the statute.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. Okay.
Then, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Dill.
I'm just going to run this up the flagpole and see how it goes and get a vote on it, if you don't mind. But I'm really just worked off of on line 1.7. It says for fiscal year 2009, the commissioner shall give priority to dairy, beef, and hog producers. Now, I think it really should be mostly dairy because that's where this whole thing started out. But the department suggested dairy, beef, and hogs. And I think that's where we should be putting this $1.2 million into those mainline species. And so I would move that we add that sentence to the bill.
Senator Dill adds a sentence A41, the 1.7 after the period through 1.8. Which again, I think follows the same argument. Certainly we can vote on it, but I can't predict next year where the need's going to be, whether there's a flood that destroys a horse operation. It's important in some districts, and they need to rebuild, and now they could utilize that livestock investment money to improve their operation at the time. I can't predict which animals are going to have the priority, which is why we're setting it up. Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would support this amendment because the original intent of this was dairy. The TB, bovine tuberculosis, is certainly causing anxiety in northern Minnesota, and the hog producers are having a real tough time of it right now. So for 2009, and that's the language, gives direction for next year only, these three will have a priority.
Well, and again, Senator Scogin, I can appreciate that. A mile down the road, I have a bison farmer in my district who has a feedlot who I buy right off the farm from. He's having the same difficulty feeding and the same expenses as any other livestock producer in the state. And again, to now unilaterally choose and not allow the department to prioritize those on need, I guess we can respectfully disagree on that, but I think that's what we just told the department to do, was to set up a priority and a needs-based criteria that we'll review, and certainly I think everyone should be able to be included in that and not just unilaterally reject it until we even see that list from the department. Other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. I don't think there were three votes on both sides, but we can take a roll call if you want. Does not prevail. All right. To staff. Who's running us through here?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think what you want to do now is you've amended the language, and I think what you want to do is adopt the livestock grant language as amended.
That would be on pages. Give us the
R1, R2, and R3 through 3.31.
Okay, Senator Vickerman moved that language, House language, as amended. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. To staff. Now we're going to go right down the order here now.
Mr. Chair, the next item on the agriculture items remaining list is the waste pesticide collection program modifications. And I do have the language of the amendment, the language you referred to earlier between House and Department fiscal staff. Whenever you're ready for that.
So we have the amendment A75 in your folder.
Right, I know.
A75 amendment. Senator Vickerman moved the A75, and there's a change in it. If staff would tell me the change.
Mr. Chair, on the A75 amendment, lines 1.9 and 1.10 are deleted. And in their place, would be on R6. This is a change to the funding portion of the pesticide program. On R6, house language, line 7.18, delete at the end of any fiscal year, and insert the commissioner determines that. And on line 7.19, delete is less than 1 million, and insert at the end of the fiscal year will be less than 500,000. So the new language on the House side would read, in each fiscal year, the commissioner shall allocate from the pesticide regulatory account a sum sufficient to collect and dispose of waste pesticides under Section 18B.065. However, notwithstanding Section 18B.065, if the commissioner determines that the balance in the pesticide regulatory account at the end of the fiscal year will be less than $500,000, the commissioner may suspend.
And Senator Vickerman incorporates that into his amendment as friendly, and this is language agreed to by our fiscal staff and the department's fiscal staff on how to handle that ag pesticide account in the future so we don't run out of money and we can don't have to lay anyone off. So any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A75 amendment as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dill.
I have a suggested amendment to try to make things a little more efficient. And as you go to page R3, line 4.17, I'd like to restore the language on the word other so that it reads at least every other year. And experience shows us that if they provide this service every other year, that seems to be adequate for most parts of the state, maybe all parts. And then down on line 4.22, also in R3, it says that each year in each county, and I would like to delete the words each year. So it reads, for residential waste pesticides, the commissioner must provide periodic disposal opportunities in each county. And they can decide whether they need to do it every year or every other year or just how it all works out. But it would allow them to continue a practice that they've had in the past where they've done it every other year, and that seems to be adequate for most areas. And if they need to kick it up to a more frequent pickup or service, they can do that as well.
And Senator Dill moves that amendment, and members and Senator Dill, again, we have the counties in the audience. This is a county priority, all our counties. This was a working group that was convened and worked over the summer. Senator Vickerman and I were on it. The counties were on it. The department was there. The ag pesticide manufacturers are there. The collection people were there. And again, efficiency-wise, again, we're collecting those, and the county's argument, and it is just, is we are collecting pesticides year-round. And they bring them in, a lot of them, into their household hazardous waste sites. They're barreling them up. They need a way to get them out every year. The collection people actually told us that they can do it just as efficient every year because they don't just run out to a county, but they would coordinate with several counties to come out on a one-stop type thing. And the cost on that yearly thing was really not a factor. Again, the counties are recording this, paying for it, and doing really what we're paying for is the pickup and disposal on a designated day. So, again, you want to get out of here by noon. We can bring the counties down one by one to start testifying on this, and we can go through that whole task force again. But I don't think Senator Vickerman wants to. This was really agreed on after many, many meetings. And, you know, again, I'm sure we'll be tweaking it to go. But this resulted from a problem in the budget year where everything was cut off.
But Mr. Chairman, what's wrong with giving them some flexibility? If they need to do it every year, they can. But it gives them the flexibility doing it every other year if that's been working out in some of these counties.
Are we ready? Any more discussion?
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
Not adopted. Any staff, do we have to move that section now?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, you need to move those sections. Can you give us the reference? Well, Mr. Chairman, it's page R3, lines 3.32 through the end. Page R4, lines 4.25 through 5.7. And then on page 6, lines 6.31 to 8.3 on page R7.
Okay. And you see that list of members on your side-by-side, too, or on your similar or different. So Senator Vickerman moves that language that was just referenced. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Prevails. Next, staff.
Mr. Chair, members, next is the prohibited pesticide use section. The House has additional language that the Senate does not.
Okay. I guess I'd ask the department to come down. I'm going to have a brief discussion here. Representative Shumpert's here, and he added a couple amendments. I still tend to think they're basically redundant, and frankly, if they're not, then there's a contrary argument that we should go back through Mary Ellen Otremba's committee and Senator Vickerman's committee, because then we are changing federal and state label licensing law. But can you point out to the members of Can staff point out the two House amendments, maybe Mr. Sullivan, that we're referring to right now?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, on page R4, lines 5.17 and 5.18 on the House side, state that a pesticide application resulting in pesticide drift beyond the boundaries of the target site, whether intentional or not, is illegal. And then on page R5, at the last line on the House side, and then continuing on to R6, is an additional section about pesticide applications on public right-of-ways.
Okay. And to the department, please introduce yourself, and if we get your comments on those two, as far as if that's kind of redundant, or, I mean, are you now, do we now enforce by label, I guess the question is, drift and off-target spray?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Paul Lemont. I'm Assistant Director of the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division, and programs I manage include the investigations of complaints of pesticide drift and the enforcement program that takes actions when it has been substantiated. One at a time, if you would. The first amendment, which appears on lines 5.17 and 5.18, is language that I believe is redundant with existing language. I do not expect that additional language is necessary for us to do our work. For example, in fiscal years 06 and 07, we had respectively 28 out of 145 penalty actions for drift and 33 out of 179 actions for drift in 07. The language that is in existing law has been longstanding and has been effective for my enforcement program since 1987 and 1989. I do not need that additional language to enforce against pesticide drift in this state.
Okay, and for the other?
The second is on line 6.27 and on to 6.30. This is not redundant language, but it is in some respects in conflict with existing statutes. For example, it appears to give sort of a safe haven for pesticide applications performed by government employees when the existing pesticide law holds all persons responsible for proper pesticide use. The language is something that is not necessary. We have had many instances where pesticides have been misused or drifted at or near rights of way, and existing language has been adequate for us to take those applicators to task. Comments?
Senator Fickerman?
Mr. Chair, I know right now that my area there was a drift, and if they talk to the Ag Department, it's taken care of. I think the safeguard is there. That's my personal opinion from what I've had. You know, you've got to take an airplane pilot. He's not dumb enough to go out there and spray when it's stormy, and he don't want that drift because he's going to be stuck with that lawsuit. So, I don't think we need it. I'm not going to support it, but we'll see what happens.
Representative Trumba, do you have any?
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Lamont, we've had many talks, but this is the law already. Sometimes my constituents call and say that there isn't enforcement, but obviously you say that there is. And I think we had not this year, but last year, we had a number of stakeholders in my office working on the enforcement piece, and a lot of them thought that that might be a good place to start, and we're continuing to work on that, and hopefully our resolution will continue.
And to follow up on Earth to Trem, and I agree with what she's saying, Mr. Lamont, and to the department people sitting in the audience, what we're going to ask for next year, we're going to have to come back and redo our fees on the ag account as it pertains to labeling and pesticides and the accounts that fund your activities out there. As a part of that review, I guess we're going to want to understand from you the response mechanisms to complaints on this, because that's what we're hearing coming in from people, is that they're saying that they call and they can't get an ag department person out there the same day. And so then they call a sheriff or police officer, and they don't get out there the same day. And we've got some problems with that connection. And so what we're going to want to do as we adjust the fees next year on all this, and we're going to have to adjust them, is, and I'm giving you notice now, to come in and let us know how we can have a same-day response to any incident that involves off-target or drift that a citizen would call into on. And so I don't think that's out of line to ask that, and I think that's the expectation in this state, that there is a response by the department or the or any entity that enforces the labeling law. So you don't have to respond to that. I'm just, yeah.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would like to do that. We do take pride in responding as quickly as possible. Your own auditor took 6 or 7 months to go through our records thoroughly, and they say we do a pretty good job. Now, there's always room for improvement. I'll be the first to say that it takes resources sometimes to improve, but I think this is a primer, and the improvements, we'd be happy to talk with you about, please.
And Representative Altremba and I will hold you to that, and we'll have a discussion on that and that report next year, too. And again, it's a simple thing. If there's an ag inspector who's on vacation for a week, obviously, even from St. Paul, Bezicki can get out there within a day to anywhere in the state. So we might make him the guy that does it. But someone needs to respond in all seriousness to these folks on a same day. That's really been one of the biggest complaints that we've had, is that there's been a lack of response to this. And I contend that Mary Ellen, Representative Tremba, is
on track with that. I don't think it's prevalent. I don't think it's rampant. But I think there are incidences where that happens, and we need to maybe have that discussion. So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rolfe.
Mr. Chair, it seems to me that, and I did have a pesticide-related bill this last year on the Senate side, and it was not related to drift. But it seems the topic of drift comes up all the time whenever you're talking about this. So I'm just a little confused as to why we're reluctant as bodies to put some clarifying language in the law, and if you say it's redundant, what's the harm in putting it into law because there is a real widespread public concern out there about drift. And if, in fact, Mr. Lamont, you're saying that the provision in 5.17, 5.18 is redundant and not needed, and I think we've had conversations as well, Mr. Lamont's been in my office on other topics and talking about the process. If this is not a problem, it's in law, you know, why is there objection to having two sentences here that will help continue to clarify things for people? Because I also understand that in Chapter 18B that we already do restate some of the federal requirements and federal statutes. So why the opposition to these?
Again, Senator Roper, I'll just respond, I guess, my read of if you look at 516 through 519, a pesticide application resulting in pesticide drift beyond the boundaries of the target site, whether intentional or not, is illegal. That's true. And each labeled chemical has its own, each chemical has a label on it. Each label is its own standalone individual law. And each chemical and each label may have different applications and limits on drift, depending on the chemical, depending on its volatility, depending on, you know, its chemistry. And there is always going to be drift in the country when you spray. For any of us that have lived out there, worked in agriculture, as our farmer friend here, the co-chair, when they're spraying 2,4-D in the spring, you can smell it all over the county. It has drifted everywhere. So there's always drift. So to say there's just absolutely no drift really ignores what the federal label law is on each and every chemical as it pertains to drift. Because this doesn't say allowable drift based on the label or volatilization based on the label. It doesn't talk about anything as far as wind speeds, which are on the label. All of that is on there, and it's different for each and every chemical. So again, to make a broad statement like this really is again, without, I mean, and we should be going through the policy committees, because that's exactly the kind of discussions that would come up on this broader language, because it isn't a broad issue. It's a very focused issue, and it's focused by each and every chemical that's used.
Mr. Chair, and now yeah. I'm even more confused, because I think the testimony was that this language is in statute and it is redundant, and that's why it's not needed.
Non-target application would be redundant. You have to target your application to the crop or the pest that you're after by federal label law. So that part is redundant. I'm concerned, regardless of what the department said, I'm concerned more about the drift, the broad no drift, because that's impossible unless you quit using chemicals. There's minute, just like it's impossible to have non-GMO crops, technically. Pollen gets in the air and will travel for miles. And even though you've planted a non-GMO crop, some of it is being picked up by GMO pollen. And it's true with chemical drift, too. It will volatilize and vaporize, and there's always some drift that goes across. But it is absolutely illegal to apply on a non-target. That is definitely redundant, and the drift center deal.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, a part I don't like about this part on number 6 at the top of the page. If we pass that provision up there, one of the practices that I use on the farm, that it would become illegal. And that is when I'm out spraying 2,4-D on my pastures, I have a flood jet on the outside nozzle so I can try to spray through the fence to get the thistles that are growing in the fence line. And then I go out on the road and spray the road ditch with the same nozzle and try to spray through the fence on the other side. And it's good to control the thistles that are in the road ditch, because there's a reservoir of seed and spreading through the fields and so forth. And I did check with Mr. Lamont just before this meeting, and that's legal for me to do that. And so the language up here would make it more difficult for me to control thistles on my own farm if I can't spray the road ditches on the roads next to my fields.
Mr. Vanna.
Representative Tremba.
I understand what you're saying, but when it drifts, it is illegal. If it drifts off of your land of what you're spraying, it is illegal, correct? And so whether we like it or not, the federal government and the state says when you have drifted outside of the border that you are spraying, or you are actually it's illegal. And so we don't have a lot to say about it, quite frankly, because it's a federal law and it's a state law.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair.
Well, Senator Bickerman.
Mr. Chair, you know, sometimes you have to spray certain chemicals, and the wind is blowing. But I'm, as a farmer, I tell our elevator, you get the devil out there and you spray that, because I don't have 3 or 4 days to wait. Sometimes you have to use a little common sense in here. And I think most farmers that I represent are very cautious of what that it could drift over on somebody else's property. So I don't think we need to change it. I think the sense is there. That's my opinion as a farmer, and my son farms now. Because you never know what kind of a pest is going to show up or what's going to happen.
Well, Mr. Chair, again,
Representative Tremba.
I live on a farm. I rent my land out. My brother's an organic farmer. The people that use my land are spraying, and they're staying within. And the fact is, if it goes beyond what you're spraying, supposed to spray, it's against federal law. So, I mean, it's not my choice. That's the federal law says.
Okay, Senator Bickerman moves 5.16 through 5.19 and 6.27 through 6.30 of the House language for a vote. That's the two amended sections. And we'll vote on those, and then we'll vote on the entire section after that. Any further discussion?
Leave it in or take it out.
He's voting to adopt it right now, which is the only motion he can do. Or the other motion would be we can adopt the entire section, and then this is the easiest way. We're going to vote on these first since they were new items other than the department bill that came in. Yes. Because we can't move to take them out because we haven't adopted anything yet. That's how conference committee works. If we skip over it, it's never adopted. Stays out.
Can we vote to take the Senate position?
Senate position.
Oh, okay. All right. Vickerman's moving the Senate position. That's the other way to do it.
And Mr. Chairman, that's 3.34 on R4 through 5.14 on R5.
Okay. Any discussion?
To be clear, Mr. Chair, that if we are adopting the Senate position, we are in essence eliminating these provisions from the House side.
Right. All those in favor of the victim motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Prevails. Okay, to staff.
Mr. Chair, members, the next item is on R7.
We're going to skip that.
Okay.
We don't need a motion on that at all.
Then the next on the list is R15. It's the Board of Animal Health, Authority to Control Bovine Tuberculosis.
Okay. And it's my understanding we're removing all the... So we don't have to take up anything other than the DNR fencing issue. It's all we have to adopt at this point. So what section is that?
Mr. Chairman, that's on R17 and 18. On the DNR... TV fencing.
Okay, our members, Senator Vickerman will move the House language in R17 and 18 through 19.18. So it's 18, 19, section 22. And what that does is basically move the authority for fencing from the DNR to the Board of Animal Health for bovine TB. Okay? So the Vickerman motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's adopted. The staff.
Mr. Chair, next is on R21 through R29. It's the Substantial Board of Veterinary Medicine language. Last time, the committee did adopt the a small section on the Senate side that basically okayed the practice of animal chiropractic by a licensed chiropractor certified to practice animal chiropractic. So what remains is and difference is that the House side has some language requiring citizenship or residency proof.
Senator Dale, you were going to follow up on that.
Mr. Chairman, I did check with Dr. King, who is the Executive Director of the Board of Veterinary Medicine and others, and he would prefer the Senate language.
Hey,
so I'll move the Senate language.
I'll move the Senate language. It looks better if I move it. You only got lucky on the last few questions. I'll move the Senate language for the veterinary sections. Can you give us the page and line numbers, the reference for folks that are keeping score here?
Mr. Chair, numbers that's on R21 through R29, Senate sections 26 through 40.
Okay. That's my motion. Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. The staff.
Okay, moving to the next sheet, the next item is the B20 language, several differences which are outlined on
here. Before we get there, so we're done with, there's no more, all these sections then, no one's got anything else for the ag titles. We have the...
Mr. Chair.
We did have the one amendment, food licensing amendment, A6. Where did that fit in? Is that later on in the bill?
Mr. Chair, that fits in with language adopted last time on food handlers. The House language was taken, and this, as I understand, is just a technical addition to that.
I'd like to move the A6 amendment because that's in a section we've just come over and going back to amend that before we move on to a new article. The A6 is a technical amendment. And you see it deletes coin-actuated vending machines. Not all vending machines are coin-actuated in our modern world. Some take cards and tokens and other things. So we just want to be clear that it's vending machines. And so that's added as a technical amendment. Any discussion on the A06? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Adopted. I think we're done with that section.
Mr. Chairman?
Oh. Okay, we have another amendment, the A07, which we're going to add in this section. A07. And I'll move the A07. What this is we've talked with the milk producers in consultation with them. The department has asked that $100,000 from the Dairy Development and Profitability Grant be utilized for TB education and working with those farmers in kind of a similar manner, but in a TB program for this year only. And so we're just moving money from one account to this. It doesn't affect the budget, and we can do it here. Again, it's been okayed by everyone. The milk producers are okay. Senator Bickerman, I believe, is okay. And that's what it does. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. Representative Coonan.
Mr. Chairman, somewhere along here, the way here, I would like to reconsider the animal chiropractic section.
You're kidding, right?
I tell you what, Mr. Chairman, members, if this has any controversy at all, we'll withdraw it.
Okay. All right, what do you got?
What I got in mind here is to make the effective date upon enactment for that section.
Okay, do you have the staff have a page and line reference?
Mr. Chair, there are several sections. I think you probably want them all enacted at final enactment. Okay.
Can you just do that by reference if we tell you to? Okay. President Cohen moves the enactment date of the animal chiropractic section to be the day of enactment or day of signature.
Mr. That's Chairman, we've discussed this, and as far as I know, that's a good idea.
All right. Any discussion to that Conan amendment? And we'll just instruct staff to change those dates wherever they appear in the language. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It's adopted. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick question. On page R38, there was that language that Representative Shemansky was concerned about, and I just want to, did we remove that on Wednesday?
We did not adopt it.
We did not adopt it.
By not adopting, it's removed at this point.
All right, very good. Thank you.
Again, it's kind of different in conference committee. If we don't adopt any section, it will not appear in the final document. We don't actually have to physically remove anything. We do have the VHS, but I think that's later. Isn't it in the bill, or is that in this section, too?
Mr. Chair, it is towards the end of the bill. It is an agriculture provision that was adopted last time, so we'd have to bring it back up to amend it.
All right, we'll do that before we... AO4 amendment. Again, this is a technical change for that fish study language by the department brought it into us. I don't have a problem with this technical changing. So we'd bring that section back before us on R75 and then amend it with this amendment. Again, it's really technical in nature, describing the commissioners, the three commissioners. So, any discussion of that? All those in favor, say aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay. Okay, one more that pertains to agriculture, and then we'll move on to the biodiesel section. The A74 amendment, Senator Vickerman will move that. This pertains to Gopher State. In the 1812, we have this language that basically clarifies that any ethanol plant that discontinues production of ethanol will not be entitled to a ethanol payment, producer payment, in the following year. And again, it came up with the Gopher State when they filed bankruptcy, but what this does is actually expand it to all ethanol plants. I think it's our intent, and it always was, that you don't get a producer payment if you don't produce ethanol. And so, rather than just leave it at 1812, we think this is good policy language to put in here also, so it travels in dual track. And Senator Vickerman would move that. Any discussion on that?
One second.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hamilton.
Just my quick comment is the money that the co-ops are shorted, I don't suppose there's any way that we can make recommendations on how those
dollars
can
be. It's a good question. In 1812, what you'll see is the commissioner coming back next year, there was about $312,000 that was to go out to, or $310,000 to go out to Gopher State, which this would essentially cancel. And then the commissioner will review all those. There's 10 pages of those creditors and other discussions, and they'll come back with a recommendation on how to utilize that money next year.
All right. Thank you.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's about it. And... yep, we got, let's move into B20. Okay, we'll do, staff, if you would, I would, I guess, move to the B20. I'm looking here, we got some amendments.
R29.
This one, and this one. Okay. I would offer the A73 amendment.
Okay.
Members, A73 just again makes a correction. This is what appears in 1812. It's for grants to production facilities of B20, for equipment grants, for updating their cold flow equipment. And what this does is take up to $300,000 of next gen energy monies that is in our department here and allow that to be used for these grants. And this is mirrors the language you see in 1812, so we need to make that correction here also. Any discussion on that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Mr. Chairman, are you going to adopt that provision then?
And yes. In fact, I would move.
What, Mr. Chairman, that's section 60 in page R51.
Okay, I'll move that section with this amendment, which is what I just said it was. Any further discussion on that? That's the Senate language on R 51, where it says 500,000, that now has changed to 300,000. That's what the amendment did. Okay? I'll move that Senate section 60. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That passes as amended. Representative Hamilton.
No, you answered it.
Okay. All right. Now, D20, starts on R-49, I believe.
29.
R-29. Our staff go through where we're at, and our recommendations here, do you know them? I think you do, or don't you?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, it starts on page R-29. You have the Senate and House language. You've got the palm oil on the Senate side and the DQ-9000 on the House side.
Okay, here's what I'll do there. Members, I would adopt... I want to adopt Senate language, and I'll explain. The BQ-9000 is important, and we've been struggling all year why there was a question from the National Biodiesel Accreditation Program on that. They don't have a problem with us requiring, what we want to do in the future is require Minnesota producers to be BQ-9000 certified, as well as the ASTM standards that they follow. What it does is give our producers a marketing tool that they go through an extra process as required by Minnesota law. However, to do that in the proper form, what we need to do is actually adopt the BQ-9000 standards as outlined by the Biodiesel Board into our statutes, and we haven't done that yet. So next year I will, or someone will introduce a bill to just adopt those, and then we can make reference to that statute when we say that you have to be BQ or you are BQ-9000 certified. So just as an explanation, we're going to leave that out this year because it just doesn't work until we adopt the statutes, and I didn't want Mr. Bull to have to work overtime putting that together for us today. Senator, or Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question about Senate language is the language that deals with palm oil.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think it'd be a good idea to keep it as far as Minnesota feedstock, if you will, or feedstock for the biodiesel. And we don't have palm trees
right
in the state of Minnesota.
We're going to move the Senate language up to, let's see, I think we can move Senate language. At this point, I'll move, Representative Hamilton will move Senate language through 28.22. And we'll start there. And again, a lot of it is the same. The only difference in that section from the House, and staff can help me, is the palm oil provision. So Senator Hamilton will move that Senate language. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It's adopted. I would move Senate language then, and I'll explain it in a minute, starting at 28.27. So what I'm doing is skipping that 75% paragraph, and then I would adopt Senate language down through, for now, 29.19. And some of that includes identical language, but there is the at least 5% language is different in there. 5% language is different in there. We started 28.27 through 29.19. I'll move adoption of the Senate language on page R30 and R31. And again, there's a lot of differences there. The Senate and in Senator Anderson's committee, I believe, worked out a lot of language. And we came to agreement with all the people involved. And I respect that. I've reviewed it. I know the House didn't have that language, frankly, through the process, but. It has been agreed to, and I'm fine with that, and I think a lot of work was put in on the Senate side, and I want to respect that work. Mm-hmm. And so I'm moving that Senate language right now. And I know the soybean folks, the department, everyone else is fine with that.
And Mr. Chair, then are we coming back to that?
I will discuss the piece I skipped after we adopt
Thank
that.
You.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The piece I didn't adopt, and I'm happy if someone wants to move it, but I don't support it at this point, and again, in the view of compromise, again, we didn't see any of this, and I'm willing to take all of it except one section, and it's a 75% on the U.S. and Canada availability. The problematic thing there, and I really don't think it came up in discussion in the Senate as I talked to people, is we can have a severe drought in a regional area of this world. And reference that the reason wheat is high right now is we've had 2 years of severe drought in Australia. And if we limit to Canada and U.S. production of
product, and we go into a Australian-like drought, which would encompass, in all likelihood, it could feasibly be the southern areas of Canada above us here where they grow crop, as well as down into the breadbasket of the upper Midwest where most of these crops are grown, we literally could see that kind of a drought situation, and we would not have product available if we did not, if we were not required to go out to other resources and get it, and we would have to revert back to our B2 or B5 or other things and actually burn more petroleum that year. And so I don't think that was discussed. I've talked to a number of people on that, and that consideration they think is a good one, because we're really locking ourselves in and we're not considering weather or other things at all. Senator Vickerman.
Chair. Mr. Chair, Senator Consula worked out an amendment that might make it the...
I mean, if you can add the weather-related things, then I'm fine with it. But I want to make sure that we have product available any year, even if there's a drought.
Mr. Chair, you know, if I worried about a drought, I'd tell my son not to plant his corn. So you have to take the roll things along. But I think we can make it better.
Senator
Castle, you...
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just working on the language here.
Okay.
What you could do is you could add a new, we had a condition for clause 4, you added something after 2.32, that said the condition in clause 2 may be waived if the commissioner finds that due to climatic conditions, that the necessary feedstock is not available.
And I'm fine with that. I'm all for being protectionist. I just assume it all came from Minnesota, and I wouldn't even want to expand it this far, so I'll admit I'm a protectionist when it comes to trade, but I do want to take that. I don't want to have to drop off our mandates if we have a severe weather situation for a couple of years, and I think that's a fair. So if you can insert that later on, I'll move this section.
Right, well, Mr. Chairman, I think I've got the language now. Just to,
all right,
and we're after 28.32. Insert the sentence. The condition in clause 2 may be waived if the commissioners find that due to climatic conditions, the necessary feedstock is unavailable.
Okay. Everyone understand that? What I'm going to do right now is move lines 28.23 through 28.26 on the Senate side, and move that additional language after the period on line 28.32. We'll take care of that. And I'm fine with that. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did get a note earlier today from Senator Anderson, and she had said that she'd worked with Senator Vickerman quite extensively.
She's actually here.
As
so
well as...
You're talking
okay.
about her. Make
right.
sure you reference
there
she's
you
in
go.
The audience.
Thank you. I'm just wanting to bring her down to the table if that's possible, because...
Sure. Senator Anderson, you want to come down?
You mentioned the climate-related or weather-related outcomes, and having been one of the members of the Flood Caucus, I was pretty impressed with how quickly the legislature can respond when there are huge weather-related disasters in the state. And frankly, I think we would be meeting, if we had such a severe weather implications for our feedstock growth that would encompass the entire North American continent, is what we're talking about here, I think we'd probably be at the table addressing issues as well. So I am reluctant to step away from the 75%, because this is going to be good for American farmers, and I just don't want to set us up for moving away from energy independence. A lot of us got here as we're talking about trying to get to sustainable, renewable energy, and if we create an opportunity where we're going to be dependent on nations like Malaysia or others for our feedstock and don't really, boost American farming, I think we're just opening the door. But
and
I'd like to...
Senator Wilk, again, yeah. Let me affirm I'm not moving away from the 75% in any way, shape, or form. I'm leaving it. I just moved that we adopt that entire section. And in the spirit of compromise that we've been trying to talk about today with the House and Senate on some other issues, I've already told you I've agreed. The House, I think, and again, my folks will have to vote, my conferees, we've agreed to take that entire Senate section that you worked on, and we did none of it in the House. Zero. So we've had no testimony on it. We've had no discussion of it on it. We're willing to take the entire thing from top to bottom. The only caveat, I said, is if there is a drought, and again, you say it's the entire United States. That's not true, because soybeans and oilseed crops, for the most part, are grown up here in the upper Midwest and southern Canada, and that is where our feedstock will be, at least to start, until we develop alternatives around the country. Maybe it's industrial hemp. I don't know. That's in here already. So I'd ask, I'm certainly glad that Senator Anderson's here. She's one of our co-chairs on the Next Gen committee, too. And Senator Anderson, I would hope you'd be accepting of that, but I certainly want you to weigh in on it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your giving me a chance to speak this morning and looking at adopting the Senate language. I really appreciate that, and I just wanted to comment that language relating to the B20, these pieces that you just moved, as well as a couple of other, well, I think they're all in there, were all worked out with a large group of stakeholders, the Farmers Union, the Farm Bureau, the Soybean Growers, the Isaac Walton League, the Flint Hills Commerce, IHCP, and the Truckers, Commerce and Ag. They were all at the table for this discussion, along with Senator Vickerman and myself. And so I think it's really some good language that will enhance the bill, and I support it strongly. I should point out that we started with the position of saying 75% Minnesota feedstock, and this is a compromise from that, is to make it North America. And I support what you're saying, Senator Erickson Ropes. I also think if they're, you know, if the feedstock's not available, then I think that's a reasonable compromise, I guess. I'm with you, Senator Ropes, that if you're at a point where there's a drought affecting all of North America to that extent, that there wouldn't be this much biodiesel available or soybean oil available, that I think we have bigger problems on our plate than this bill.
And I hope if that ever happens that we're making it out of algae.
Well, there you go. And that's another part of what we...
From our wastewater plants. And we don't have to worry about water.
And we're funding that in our section of the bill. And so,
we appreciate
that. We're very supportive of that as well.
I think that's an exciting project.
And I don't know if any of these, Mr. Chair, if any of these other participants in this discussion want to weigh in on this. But that's really all I wanted to say.
Senator Vickerman?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I think with the new addition we put on here, if we run out, the commissioner has the right to go wherever he needs to get it. Let's hope it never happens.
No.
But it's the safeguard, and I'm going to ask you, because I told you I wouldn't change the bill unless I had your permission. Do you think does that do any harm, or could that help it?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Rickman, I really appreciate that, and you're one of those people, when you give your word means everything, and I really appreciate that. I think, you know, the whole point here is to benefit Minnesota farmers and our economy and our environment. I think this language will do that, and so that's why I support it. I think what Representative Duncan is suggesting is a reasonable amendment, though. I don't have a problem with it personally.
Any discussion to this section that I just moved?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Could I just, you know, I said climatic, and climate is sometimes kind of longer term, and just to make sure that they've got enough room to move for short term fluctuations, that should probably be weather related, so due to weather related conditions.
All right.
Just to make sure that the standard's not too high.
Okay, everyone's accepting on this. Does anyone want to talk at this point?
Mr. Chairman, I think...
I'm asking if he wants to talk, since everyone's accepted this. Does anyone want to come talk? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That section is adopted. Staff, can you move us through the next sections we should adopt?
Well, Mr. Chairman, you do have the language that you didn't from the B20 yet on 29.20 on the Senate side and 38.11. I'm just dealing with the exceptions.
And again, I would move the House language under the exceptions. And again, this deals with
there was two additions to this on the house side, which again were worked out with people along the way. One of them was the off-road logging and machinery equipment. Again, they are too far away from a plug-in or a heated building source with their equipment out in the North Woods when they are in the dead of winter up there. And they just want to make sure that this cold flow ability and their older equipment would fire up and go. The other question we heard from was from airline industry, and it's not just Northwest Airlines, it's everyone out at the airport here and frankly around the state, whether it's Hibbing or International Falls or others. All they are asking for is an exemption right now until again they can get squared away with their filters and their performance of the off-road vehicles. This isn't anything that they use on the road, you know, their plows and other things that are on roads. This is literally for the de-icing equipment, which they use for passenger safety, as well as the moving the planes in and out of the gates, is what the airlines have said they need. I said okay to all of these, but I also put a sunset in of May 1st, 2012, which is when the 10% mandate goes in. If any of these are still necessary at that time, again, adhering to Ann Rest in the Senate and her persnicketiness for sunsets, I thought it's a good time actually to review here too. Have them come back and tell us again why your equipment won't work with the current fuels available. Let them make their case, and we can certainly extend those out again at that time. So I'm offering that to Senator Vickerman to keep peace in the valley.
Mr. Chair, I've been here a long time, and we helped Northwest Airlines get the first loan, special session. Now I pick up the paper, the boss is going to get $18.2 million if they join. So I'm somewhat reluctant to accept that. I'm not a solid in that point. And I, we're getting along very well. But I want to tell you that there's nobody who's going to be able to tell me they can't plug in the electric. They got electric cord at that airline. They better have, or they should have. I keep them in my own farm. I plug our big tractor in, so I'm sure it'll start. I don't like to get into too much of that, but I can see the loggers. I went up to my cabin last winter. They're putting in a pipeline, and I don't know how they ever did get them started back out to those big cats. You know, you don't just pull those big, that big equipment. Part of the problem is, and I'm pretty sure I'm right, you got to have clean, blended fuel. If you got water and junk in where they get their supply, that's where you plug up the filters. Now they holler, what about the filters? Well, what is the filter for? The filter's put there so that only the good fuel goes in to the engine. I haven't discussed this with any of my members. I'm not hung up on it.
I guess just to add, Senator Vickerman, I do agree, and just for information's sake, the Department of Commerce has worked with a lot of these people who have plugged filters, and they'll actually go in and tell them why it was plugged, whether it was actually the new low sulfur diesels that are out there or whether it was biodiesel. And usually we're finding in the layering it wasn't the biodiesel. It was something else that plugged it, and the biodiesel got up behind that and doesn't, and the new filters are only 2 microns, and it's a problem. Now this is older equipment, and the argument the airlines folks are making, and again I'll repeat it, although Northwest Airlines is obviously a main one out there, this would also apply to Sun Country and AirTran and all the others that utilize that airport. None of us are overly excited about Northwest Airlines right now. But again, their concern is that they haven't added fuel tank heaters or other things to their de-icing equipment and some of that truly health and safety equipment out there that actually gets the planes off the ground and keeps them moving. And they would, until, and they're going to continue to work with our folks. I told them, you got a couple years to get your equipment in order, and the sunset is coming. And they said, that's fine, but to do it and then, run into that problem and not be able to de-ice planes they wanted the opportunity for a couple years, which I thought was reasonable.
And obviously that was before Northwest Airlines made their announcement with Delta. But again, this isn't just for Northwest Airlines, for all airports around the state that deal with the airline Duluth and others, and it's for their safety equipment. So I'd hope you'd allow it, but I do understand your persnicketiness towards one of the airlines in particular.
Well, Mr. Chair, I haven't had a chance to do one-on-one with my committee. Would it be all right if it took 5 minutes, not to leave, but if they got anything they'd like to enter into? We just passed the bill limits on mules, and I don't want to be as stubborn as a mule on this. So do you have any questions, members?
Any discussion on this for either side?
For the inside.
And I think it's benign, and really, the sunset, the rest of it I think everyone's okay with too, but it's just that particular one. And again, I really don't want us to get a bang on if all of a sudden de-icing equipment isn't working when we go to B5 next year. And I would hope their mechanics and the others are working on using any product. I think you have the same product problem with B2 myself. But
Mr. Chair, in the spirit of compromise, let's cut them down to 2 years.
On the sunset?
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chairman, I think what Senator Bickman is talking about is just for the aircraft landing field part. So you could, on 38.18, insert until May 1, 2010, vehicles and equipment used exclusively. So you would leave the sunset for the rest of them 4 years out.
Let's see how that sounds. So that would give them one winter to work with it, is what you're saying. So the first winter, they can do their test, see how it works, and come back, and we can have the discussion then.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, we'll hopefully be back here, and we can look at it.
All right. Seems reasonable. So we'll get them through the first winter, and then we can have the discussion again and give their mechanics and others the opportunity on all the airlines to work with that B5 product and see how it's working. Then they come back and make their case again.
All right. I would move that.
Come on up.
You want to read that Senate Council so we're sure we're in
the right? Senator Vickerman's moving that amendment to the House language as part of the adoption of that section.
Mr. Chairman, it would be on 38.18 before vehicles insert until May 1, 2010, comma.
Former Representative Schoenfeld.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jerry Schoenfeld with the Minnesota Fighting Birds about East of Council. I'm really speaking to a different part of your amendment here, and that is that I only want to give you some historical reference to this. I think when we did the original bill, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission was actually the one that requested the deal on the nuclear power plants. And on that particular item, I know you're sunsetting that as well. There already is a sunset in the law, in that once they approve it, it then would go off. I don't know if you want to consider leaving that one out or not, because there already is kind of a sunset saying that once it's approved on the federal level, it'll go off.
Well, again, I'd like to leave it, again, in the spirit of compromise. Okay. I don't care if it's a federal law or state law. Again, they can come to us and let us know in the next couple of years whether it's working. I think it's good for them to come back. This has been here since B2 when I was part of that conference committee, and so I appreciate that insight, and I had heard that, and it's good to have it on the record. And I think that gives them notice also, along with the railroads who are coming down now too, because I have heard that there's a lot of those GE engines that run on biodiesel since we had that discussion last week.
Mr. Chairman, John Applett, with the law firm of Messler and Kramer, representing the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association. You've heard that there are some locomotives that run on biodiesel, not all locomotives. I think we made the case a couple of years ago when you created this exemption for railroad locomotives that actually using biodiesel increased the NOx emissions, which we are required to reduce, and also that there were issues related to the use of the product as well in locomotive engines. And it's because of the design of locomotive engines that this is a problem. They have these huge pistons like this that, because of the way they function, create more NOx, etc. They don't run well on this, and I think we made our case to you earlier in that regard. Let me say, there is new technology coming along. The Caterpillar engines that are coming onto the market, slowly indeed, can run on biodiesel, and indeed a couple of my members run engines that burn biodiesel right out of the plant that makes it out out by Hanley Falls, I think. But a lot of them, most of them, the vast majority of them do not. And the reason I come and sit here is to remind you that we build these things to last for 50 years. We don't build them to last for a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. We build them to last a half a century. And we're going to be using the equipment that I'm talking about for a long, long time to come. Mr. Chairman, I understand what the point you did make about coming back and arguing our case again. I think I could save you that debate if right now, if we were just to leave that exemption in place.
Thank you for that, Mr. Appitz. And I would like you to come back and argue your case before our committee or any of the other committees, because I think a review is good. And frankly, anecdotally only, the information I've received from you and others on the GE engines that you're using now was older information, and I have heard from those that have been in contact with GE that indeed they are certifying some of those older engines now for biodiesel use. So I think rather than going through that extended debate and discovery period at this point and having all sides have the opportunity to bring in that information, I really think it's best to have that discussion next year or the year after or any time before 2012. But I do appreciate it. I do understand, and I was on the first conference committee and know why we put it in, and you're right. But the fact is, a lot of these engines now are being recertified for use, even the older engines with biodiesel, now that we have a history of B2, and that's why the truckers are sitting here saying we're ready to go with it. They're using older engines in a lot of those rigs, too. And they're running a B2, and they're going to run a B5. And a lot of those mechanics are similar to those diesels in the trains also. And so I would just like to have that discussion. We're happy to work with you, and if there's any if it is not going to be warrantied or function properly over the lifespan of one of your engines, and again, maybe we categorize them to those specific engines and not just have the entire railroad industry. It's just too much to bite off at this point in time.
Mr. Chairman, message received. If I could just say, if we could have that debate sooner than later, it would be good for our industry, and very specifically because of this. There are a couple of different classes of the railroad industry. The short lines, most of my members, run in the state, and they will be covered by this. The Class 1s are national railroads and international railroads that don't have to fuel in Minnesota. And they don't have to buy from Mr. Krogman's jobbers, and they don't have to use this stuff. They can run across the border in Fargo to Fargo and refuel over there. So it's an economic question for a lot of people in Minnesota because of this as well. And so I encourage us doing this sooner than later so that they have time to plan for that.
All that discovery sometime before 2012, and I'll commit to you. I'm happy to do it next year if I'm sitting in this spot.
I hope you are, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Thank you.
Further discussion to the Vickerman amendment to adopt, or my amendment to adopt House language with the additional language until May 1st, 2010, after line 38.18. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted. Okay. Staff?
And Mr. Chairman, I assume the disclosure, which has not changed in subdivision 4, you're adopting. Now you've got the annual report on page R32.
I do the Senate language on that also. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 That's adopted. Does that finish the biodiesel?
No, Mr. Chair, the biodiesel language picks up again on page R49 with a proposal and a task force or two. But, Mr. Chair and members, the House and Senate language on the proposal for petroleum inspection fee revenue and technical cold weather issues are the same as I see them.
I will move the. I'd move sections 56 and 57 of the Senate language with the one change on line 46.5, change January to February. That was a request made by the department so that all their reports aren't piling up on one day in January, and I don't have a problem with that. We're here for longer session next year. So I would move sections 56 and 57 with that one change. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. Staff.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you can go to the next page in R50 and you can see the biodiesel or bio-based diesel alternatives. There is some significant language on the Senate side, some additional language from what you have on the House. It's also kind of couched a little bit differently on the Constitution.
Again, I think Mr. Knauss and Senator Rickman, this was again that same part of that language that you all worked on over in Senator Anderson's committee, so I would move that section, the Senate language, section 58. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That's adopted. Members, we're going to skip section 59 because that's already been adopted in Senator Anderson's bill, so we don't have to do that. Which brings us down to, we already did section 60.
And 61 is also in the other bill.
Section 61 is in the bill, so we don't need to do section 59. So we're done. Is that it for biodiesel?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll move now, before we're going to go back to Veterans Affairs, but before we do, we have one, I believe, other ag amendment. It's the Teddy Roosevelt bill. Senator Dill, I don't know if you want to move, or I'm happy to move the AO8 amendment. I'll move it for discussion.
Okay.
Section AO8, members, this is a Senator Dill's finally known, I'm shortening it because it's a really long title, but to the Teddy Roosevelt language. Basically, we ran into the House a little problem with Senator Osmond tried to amend this on the floor. I think it probably would have gone on, but our northern contingency got a little excited because they claim, and rightly so, they already have a lot of open land. And in fact, more than they really want, because they lose tax base, and I guess we really didn't think that through. This is important language for the township. I understand the counties and others. It's basically asking them to consider these open land factors when they're doing zoning and planning out there. Certainly townships are worried about encroachment from cities and county developments and other things. So the townships worked on this language and basically came up with that if you're in a county or municipality or township or state or anything else that has at least 80% of the pre-settlement wetlands remaining, so you have a lot of wetlands, a lot of open space, you would not be included under the Teddy Roosevelt language. And I have a map that they gave me. It's basically those northern tier of counties. The ones that would fall under this are Aiken, Beltrami, Carlton, Cass, Clearwater, Cook, Crow Wing, Hubbard, Isani, Itasca, Kennebec, Coochiching, Lake of the Woods, Mille Lacs, Pine, St. Louis, and Wadena counties. All have at least 80% of their pre-settlement wetlands left. So by doing that, we're just simply, and again, they can do it if they want, but it doesn't require them to consider. And I'm hopeful, Senator Dill, that compromise will get it by my roommate, Representative Rick Avina, and his northern contingency. We could have said north of Highway 2, probably, too, and gotten away with the same thing, but I'd ask your comment on it.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, in that part of the state of Minnesota, there is a big problem with fragmentation of forest land, which decreases the efficiency of the logging industry, and I really think they need to consider some of the things in this bill in that part of the state also. But since I want to move things along as quickly as possible and compromise as part of the business around here, I would like to accept the junkie amendment on this. But I do have an addition that I think you may want to just include as a friendly amendment. It came from the Department of Agriculture, and as part of this whole process of encouraging local units of government to do a better job of planning and zoning and taking into account preservation of ag land, open space, preventing the fragmentation of forest land and ag land and so on. We had a task force that is part of the earlier compromise on this. And if we go to page R49, at the top of the page there's an agricultural and open space preservation task force. And you go down to lines 45.14 after Farmers Union, recommendation from the Department of Agriculture is to add the following language, which I just have one copy of it here, to expand the task force to include, the task force wouldn't include these people, but we'd be consulting with them, the Commissioners of Agriculture and Natural Resources, the Executive Director of the Board of Soil and Water Resources, and other state agencies as needed. It shouldn't be controversial, but if we could just add that to the amendment.
If you would give that language to staff so they have it. And I would incorporate that into my amendment. I think that's fine. As long as the department's fine with it. And again, I will comment. I know that the northern folks are concerned about the fragmentation, but not to the point that they want your bill up there. But they have discussed that, and we have discussed it in other committees, the environment committees and others, all the time. Discussing that, particularly now that there's a lot of companies selling that land that used to be huntable and usable and snowmobileable, and the trails go across it, and now they're worried a lot of that is going into private hands, and so they are fully aware of it. But again, to get this back and not have a big argument on the floor from northern folks, I guess I thank you for accepting that, and I would move that. I would move the. Senate language on that with this amendment and the additional language that Senator Dill just explained. Mr. Knoss.
Mr. Chairman, I just the way this is drafted, it talks about less than 80% of the county's pre-settlement wetlands, but we don't define pre-settlement wetlands. I'm just going to suggest we have that term defined elsewhere in statute. And we even define pre-settlement wetland, and that's basically where the map comes from, is the existing language. Rather than stating it each time, what I'd recommend is instead of what the language you have there, just say in a greater than 80% area as defined in section 103G.005 subdivision 10B in each place, because then we make sure we're talking about the same place and pre-settlement wetlands is defined, because that was worked out for the Wetlands Conservation Act in that chapter. And so basically each place would be, instead of saying in a county having less than, because they can also do a study for a watershed area, and they can determine whether that's an 80% area if they want to. It's allowed under that law. And so I would, rather than stating it each time at less than 80%, just call it a greater than 80% area as defined in that section. So we can just modify that later.
That's
but
fine.
I just want to
modify that with that reference in statute. That's fine. It says the same thing. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Senator Dill, we just adopted your section. Do you have a question?
Well, yes.
We can still do stuff.
Well, I haven't really seen this before. We didn't see it on anywhere, and I'm trying to find out from somebody from the audience.
Are the townships here?
Because I've gotten calls from all over the state to look at this carefully.
Please identify yourself for the tape and answer Representative Otremba's questions whether the townships in her area support this.
Representative, thank you, members of the committee. I'm Ken Sewell, General Counsel for the Minnesota Association of Townships. And Representative Otremba, I believe that the phone calls you probably received were to the bill as originally introduced. At that time, we did not support the bill. We had a number of concerns and problems. Working with Senator Dill and the County Association, we were able to arrive at this compromise, and it is now neutral enough that we are fine with the language as it appears in the side-by-side.
Representative Tremble.
Here, in other words, you're neutral, you're not...
Mr. Chair, Representative Tremble, where we're at, the language, if this bill were not to pass, we're not harmed, but it does do a number of things that create good dialogue, and we really appreciate having worked with Senator Dill to get it to the point where we have language that promotes good dialogue and good communications, but stops short of mandates. The bill was introduced, contained a number of mandates of what we had to adopt and things that had to be in there that were absolute one-size-fits-all, and we oppose that, and so we would appreciate this language going in so that we can move forward with the dialogue and the debate and avoid having to come back another year with more controversial provisions.
So is this a work in progress, or is this going to be law?
Senator. Representative Tremba, basically what he's saying is the original said they must consult and they must consider and they must talk about open spaces every time there's a project or a development project or action by any of the local governments. That's why they said we don't have the energy or the resources or the time to do that unless you're going to give us a whole bunch of money. Senator Dill then working with the cities and the counties support this or worked with him too, and the townships basically have said, you know, they've moved it to say that they may consult, they may consider these factors of open space as defined here in their planning process, which, like Mr. Solon said, really gives a dialogue to the townships in particular where they would use it is if a city is coming out on an annexation for a development. And they're saying, wait a minute, this statute says that maybe we should sit down and dialogue a little about the encroachment onto farmland and other areas before you move ahead with that development. And we really see that in the Twin Cities area, obviously, out to Center Dills District in Wright County and other places. We're just gobbling up ag land in particular for development projects, and townships aren't having a big say in it. They're being annexed by cities and others, so that's why we think this language is useful for dialogue in the future and should be helpful to the townships and others. Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, members, we are losing 2 acres of farmland every minute in this country. And in the state of Minnesota, according to Department of Agriculture statistics, we have lost 1/15 or 2.3 million acres of our farmland in the last 15 years or so. And if we keep losing our farmland at that rate, in 200 years, we won't have any farmland left. We don't have enough farmland as it is because of the shortage now of corn, soybeans, wheat, and so forth. I think this is a major issue that we've got to address. We just can't continue to fragment our natural resources, our farmland and our forest resources. It's just not good. Now, here's an article from Ford's Dairyman about all the fragmentation and eating up of farmland in Pennsylvania and how some counties out there are dealing with it. A recent article here about Scott County and the farmers fighting to preserve their farmland because of urban sprawl. They're concerned that there's not going to be a farm left in Scott County before long. And we just have to start taking some action on this. And the way I look at it, the best way to do it is to get the local units of government to do a better job of planning and zoning. And when they redo their comprehensive plan, to take into consideration where the development should occur. In my view, most of the development should occur within city limits where there's city water and sewer or nearby. Or out in the countryside, you should have clustered development rather than have a house on every 40 acres and fragment the farmland even more. It's just not good for agriculture. We talked about spraying pesticides here, not having pesticide drift. It's very easy to spray when you've got a farm field next to another farm field, but when you have a farm field next to a rural residence, there's a problem. And so I just think this is a very important thing. The reason I'm calling it the Teddy Roosevelt bill is because he preserved more open space than any other president in U.S. history, 230 million acres during the time he was in office, or 84,000 acres every single day. And so it's just and then with the compromise we've got here, and I have a drop of a bunch of things out of here, which I won't take time to talk about right now, but with the working of the cities and the townships and the counties, we're all set to go together in this task force now and work some things out, talk about the green acres issues and other things to help us do a better job of preserving our very important and valuable natural resources in this state.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you. All right, I think we're done with agriculture, and we're going to move quickly now to finish up, I hope, the veterans sections. Let me get my spreadsheet. Find your veterans spreadsheet. Members, we...
Mr. Chairman?
Hang on a minute. That's agriculture. The chair doesn't have his spreadsheet yet. I got it here somewhere. Here. Okay. All right. Where do we leave off, Mr. Cleary? We have an amendment here now.
Mr. Chairman, we left off with the
the discussion of Veterans Homes strategic planning study, and we do have a new amendment. We can thank Mr. Bodern for drafting that. The A5
amendment. I withdraw the other amendment that was before us for the junkie amendment. I'll offer the A5 amendment. And again, this is a compromise amendment. I'd ask the department to come down.
That's my other amendment.
Thanks for coming down. We talked about this. This is all scripted, but but I do want to get it on tape. I think it's important. You know, one of the considerations and the problems we had was at this point, I know your committee is meeting, and I have utmost respect for the and regard for what you're doing over there. But again, even by your document, you're supposed to be consulting and interest groups and interested parties, which legislators are part of that. But as of this point, we didn't even know you were meeting because we hadn't gotten those notices. And I think it's really a communication thing. So first I'd ask you two questions. And if you answer affirmative, we can move ahead for the tape. Number one, I assume you'd be fine with again, letting the chairs of the committees and leads of the committees know your meeting dates and that they're welcome to come and sit in and participate. You don't have a problem doing that?
Mr. Chair, no, we're fine with that.
Okay. And then the second part, on A4, we had a whole laundry list of things that we needed addressed. And I still think we need them addressed because what we're doing is going to utilize them for planning next year. And if Senator Vickerman and I send you a letter rather than put it in session law, all of these items that we would like to see come back in our committee next year for discussion and ask you to bring that information back. If we write the commissioner a letter, would that suffice to get you to grab that information and bring it back for us by next January or February? You could do that by letter from us?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. With that, then, I would move the, thank you, I'd move the A5 amendment, and again, the A5 amendment then, members, leaves off that entire section of A4, section A. It continues, though, with section B and C of the A4 is still there, and D. And then section E is also changed. So we're not referencing a specific project, but rather the project list that was developed this year that has been worked on by a lot of people in a lot of groups. And again, in consultation with these two groups that are already in the department, we'll sit down and continue to work on those projects and fit them into this new view of delivery of health care. And then the commissioner will come back and report to us on all those items as outlined in there. So it just continues that work, but it isn't project specific. And that's been agreed upon, Senator Vickerman, if you want to affirm that for the tape.
Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you for working with the Senate side to get a compromise so that we could all agree on, and I agree with it 100%. I think it was quite a move on your part, maybe quite a move on
my
part.
That worked. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. To staff.
Mr. Chairman, there are a couple other little technical amendments. There's one more House-only item on R69 that I think Mr. Cleary may want to describe, the County Veterans Services Working Group.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Cleary.
Okay, that last item on the side-by-side is House-only at the County Veterans Services
what
Working
page?
Group.
Give us the page and line.
Oh, I'm sorry, R69.
R69.
Yes.
And what line are you on?
69, looking at the bold on section 20, 56.5. Line 56.
Okay. This is the CVSO working group language. Again, I don't think anyone has a problem with it. Basically, what we ran into this year, members, to refresh your memory, is that we had a auditor's report come back on CVSOs. And once that auditor's report came back, we had some hearings on it. And what we instructed in here is that the CVSOs get together with the department and others, as outlined here, review the statutes that guide CVSOs and department activities and come back to us with recommendations on new statutes and other things, and also review that auditor's report. So it's an important follow-up to the auditor's report, and they really need to meet over the summer, and they've all agreed to this and think it's a good way to go about it. So I guess Senator Vickerman would move that CVSO working group section.
I so move.
And that is down to 57.11, from 56.5 to 57.11. Any discussion on that? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? To staff.
And Mr. Chairman, and I'm not sure, I think this has been distributed, and Senator Vickerman asked me to prepare the A2 amendment.
Okay,
that are being distributed now. Basically, this asks Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to evaluate the status and need for additional veteran cemeteries in the state, and to consider a new veteran cemetery in southern Minnesota, and requires a January 15th, 09 report regarding that.
Senator Vickerman moves the A2, and again, I agree with this amendment, again, in a matter of compromise. We're looking at a veteran seminary in northern Minnesota. We have a lot of veterans where we're from in southern Minnesota, where a lot of us are from, as I look around here. And we just want to make sure that the department is considering those needs also. And so we're going to ask them to come forth with some recs and some opportunities that might be there for that end. Any discussion on that?
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Vickerman.
The reason I put this together, it's a long ways from my area up to Minneapolis, a lot further up to Camp Ripley, and there are a lot of veterans in the southern part of the state. And so I thought at least we should have them take a look and see what we can do there.
Okay. All those in favor of the A2 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That's adopted. To staff.
Mr. Chairman, there are two more technical amendments that I have. I have the A15, okay. If you can get that.
I would move the A15 amendment.
What this does, last year there was in the funding provided to the Department of Veterans Affairs, there's a requirement that an ombudsman attend meetings of the Veterans Home Board. Obviously that board was then, by executive order, transferred to the Department of Veterans Affairs. This clarifies, just because the other language wouldn't do this, that the ombudsman is basically to attend meetings of the Health Care Advisory Council that is established in this bill.
Okay. Any questions? It's really technical. We're just defining the name in that section. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. And then we have, what, the A16?
That's right.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, in order to take this one up, you need to go to R54. There's some previously adopted language. Basically, you would move to reconsider that, set it aside, and then adopt this amendment. What this amendment does is it takes the provision that was adopted on the discrimination against the family of service personnel, and I think the page reference is slightly wrong there. You want R53.
On R53. 1.3 should say on R53.
Right. And what this does is, the way that's done in the part you already adopted, it goes into another section and it doesn't really fit too well there. So this amendment pulls it out of that coding, puts it in its own section, which would clarify that the misdemeanor penalties don't apply. And then just for the full comfort on that, line 1.24 of the amendment clarifies that the default misdemeanor penalties that are elsewhere in statute wouldn't apply to this section.
Okay. So, again, we're just clarifying that language that's in there, but we need to, we're reconsidering the motion to adopt that language last time, and then we will amend that language with this amendment in front of you. So that'll become the official language. Any questions to that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It's adopted. Anything else, staff? In Veterans Affairs, we haven't dealt with.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have anything further.
Members, we've been through all sections, we've been through all amendments, and before us we have all of our recommendations. Is there any questions or comments on the final vote before we take a final vote on adoption of this conference committee report by the members? Senator Vickerman?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just want to thank all the committees on both sides. Been a lot of hard work. We've done a lot for veterans in ag with the little amount of money we had. Wished we'd have had more so we could do more. But I think we've taken care of every issue without raising any kind of taxes. We were able to get it within our committees. And I think all of you deserve. I don't know if you can do a round of applause in here or not. Then it's not kind of different. But I'll personally say I want to thank all of you for working hard for veterans because they are probably one of the most important things that we can do in this district.
And I thank you, Senator Vickerman. Again, I'll affirm that I truly believe that the Ag and Veterans Committees are the least partisan and the most bicameral committees in this place. And that, you know, every year we seem to be able to come together with one or two short meetings, and the last one was a little longer than we usually do. But we come to agreement, and we move forward in a unified way and support each other and more importantly, support our veterans and our farmers and producers in this state. So it's an important committee. This is a good bill, and I would remind people, I'm sure the governor knows it, and I will thank the governor, actually, for the B-20 help. Senator Vickerman, you were the author, I was the author, but we're all authors on this bill. The governor made the announcement in last August to move with this, actually first in the nation, B-20 mandate, and everything we did in here is important. That's the one I'll guarantee you that'll be talked about around the country when we're done. And so I want to also thank the governor for his assistance on that, and we're looking forward to signing off with him on that once this becomes law. And we'll invite everyone to the room that day, I hope. So, with that, members, I would move. Anything else from staff that we need to do? Oh, Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Erickson-Rolfe and I have been discussing the amendment that gives 6 days of unpaid leave per year to family members, mm-hmm. of servicemen and so forth, to attend various events. I'm just wondering if 6 days is maybe quite a bit. Maybe that's a little more.
Senator Dill?
Yes.
I can comment to that. I have a son who's going to Iraq. He's deploying May 31st. And he'll be feet on the ground September 1st. And the days off aren't just for the ceremony that he might leave on May 31st, where my family or I would want to attend that, but it's also he's going to be in training camp down at Fort Sill, Oklahoma. And there's going to be opportunities for me to travel down there, I hope, when he's got breaks and visit with him and other family members. And 6 days might not be nearly enough. When you talk about the ways you have to travel around this country to visit service members, because it's not all just Minnesota ceremonies. And it'll be true when he comes back, too. He'll be redeployed when he comes back home, God willing, probably at Wisconsin is where most of the activities happen upon their return. And then there's ceremonies that happen in this state when they return. And so there's a lot of opportunities, and a lot of them are multi-day opportunities. Is 6 days too much? Probably for most cases it could be, but in some cases it won't be. And so we just want to really give those families the opportunity to be with their loved ones, whether it's husbands and wives or kids or grandkids, as they deploy for our country. And I'm personally involved with that at this point, so I concur that I think it's fine the way it is. Military Affairs and Veterans Affairs have worked very hard on this to... And Military Affairs and Veterans Affairs are the ones that brought that length of time to us. It wasn't something that we made up. I think you carried the bill, or I'm not sure who in the Senate. So that's the reason.
And Mr. Chair, I hate to bring this up at the last moment here, but I carried a bill just this past session now on expanding the use of sick leave. That's sick leave that people already have in the bank. Just expanding the use to be able to take it for adult family members. And I got quite a bit of pushback from businesses. And then also we had, there was sort of a bipartisan division on supporting that bill because of the impact to business. And that was just the possible use of an additional 3 days per year and this is already accrued sick leave. And I'm starting to hear some concern that the governor is going to maybe not support or support that bill. And then we also had another one that in requesting, directing employers to give employees time off to donate blood. And we're getting pushback on that. So this is a huge chunk of days, and I agree, in terms of the vet side of it and the family side of it, this is terrific. I was wondering if the House had any discussion about its impact on business and where the governor stands, because the governor vetoes, I don't know, are we at risk here with the governor?
Again, I don't see military affairs here. Veterans affairs is here. I know they've worked with military affairs, but military affairs, I'm brought this to us. So this is not, I can't speak for the governor, but I know he is the commander-in-chief of military affairs. They brought it to us. This is their initiative. So the answer is no, in my opinion. That is not something that's been offered up as non-acceptable.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, this is such a little thing to ask for people who went over and got shot at. Some of them come back without legs and arms. if I run a big business, had a business, I would give them 10 days, 6 days. If something would happen, God forgive your son,
mm-hmm.
6 days.
Right.
I mean, let's get together. I don't care about big business. They can afford to do it. We've gave them all kinds of breaks.
All right. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't speak for the governor, obviously, but I just want to say I know he's been a strong supporter of the veterans of this state and otherwise. To my recollection, we have heard these bills in committee, and I don't recall any buddy that testified against them.
No.
And so I just want to, while I have the floor here, I want to thank both Senator Vickerman and Representative Junkie for your leadership on this. And Al, I always joke you, when I'm chair of this committee, I'll treat you with respect as well.
Okay, any other discussion? All right, members. And again, the 6 days are unpaid, so we're not using vacation time here either. It's just unpaid. It doesn't cost the employers other than the non-productive employee not being there. So, members, I move final adoption of the conference committee report as we amended it along the way, with the instructions for the staff to make minor revisions and corrections and make sure everything fits together. I don't know the official thing that you do, and I will allow you to do that. And hopefully it'll be done soon. Maybe we can get a signature from everyone and get it on our desk by Monday so we can take it up fairly quickly next week.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Vickerman,
both you and myself have worked to move something like this along fast. I'd like to have this bill as quickly as we can get it to both bodies, because there's going to be a lot of cuts. We had to cut $200 million as it was the other day. I want to have this sealed and signed and over with before they have a chance to look at taking any money away.
I'd hate to have to revisit this bill sometime later after today, because I can see where we'd spend a lot of time discussing. All right, to that motion, members, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The conference committee report is adopted. Thank you, members. Thank you, staff. Thank you, audience, for the participation. We are adjourned.